believe Ryan when he says that, don't you?
That I'm going to jump in whenever I want?
I think if something happens, you would jump in.
I'm cool with that.
Or maybe
if something doesn't happen, I'll jump in.
Right.
You're welcome to jump in.
The world is your swimming pool, Ryan Burrow.
I've got the button. I can hit it.
Who has gone swimming this summer yet? Because I have not.
Oh, I swam a bunch on vacation, but only in chlorinated pools.
I swam last night.
Did you swim last night?
I did.
Did you? Where did you swim?
Palatine Park District swimming pool.
Is there any fear or reluctance from anybody?
About what?
About the Zika. Now, it can't be in a swimming pool, obviously.
The brain-eating amoeba is, but not chlorine.
But a brain-meeting amoeba is also bad.
We never have a brain meeting.
Hello? I'm an amoeba. Nice to meet you, brain. That would be weird, too. But that would ruin your summer, to have one of those brain-eating amoebas.
Be like breaking your arm at the beginning of summer, right?
It would be worse.
Just ruin it, right?
It would be worse.
I haven't gone to my little beach club yet this summer, and it's scheduled later in the year with my great niece, Adeline, who Addie just turned a year old, so she's going to actually swim.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that, my niece wouldn't let her in the water
because
babies, you know, they drink the water.
Yeah.
So this is going to be the big swim and a Snyder family
reunion.
She'll
be all floated up, I bet.
Oh,
right?
God,
completely
yeah.
covered with floating devices.
Water Wing Central.
Sure.
But my sister's gone a couple times, and I said, aren't you afraid of that brain-eating amoeba?
Yeah.
And she said, no. And I kind of am.
Yeah.
It goes up your nose, and it's not asking permission. It just goes up your nose.
Right. Now, which is the one that they're warning people on their way to Rio to not put their head underwater? Is that for the brain-eating amoeba, or is that for Zika, or is that for both?
I think it's a combo platter.
Is that for everything?
I just feel bad for all these Olympians. These kids have worked so hard.
Oh, for years.
And then there are just so many bad things going on.
Right.
There was something I heard yesterday, Ryan. You might be familiar with this. There was some structure that was built, but something happened to it, and it collapsed.
Yeah,
yeah, Olympic Village has been a challenge. It seems like the Australian team got there a little bit early. There's been a fire there so far.
Did the Australians start it since they got there early?
Maybe. No one's saying.
They were the ones that complained when they first got there and said, this isn't right. These conditions aren't great. So,
but can I point something out in terms of the Olympics that, I don't know, for some reason seems to be lost on people? It's nearly, if not totally impossible, to get your city ready in just a few short years for the Olympics. There's just too much that has to happen to get your city prepared for it. I mean, think about all that has to happen. If you look at the Olympics for the last, I don't know how many decades, there's always this sort of thing. It's not going to be ready. The hotels won't be right. The water's going to be awful. It's just a cycle because there's so much that goes into it. You almost can't get it done in that short of a span.
You have to rebuild a city.
You,
I mean,
you do.
Essentially, the infrastructure has to be there. And that's one of the complaints that we've been hearing, actually, the IOC, as they look to future bids and future opportunities is, you know, maybe we don't want to take a flyer on these cities that aren't already ready.
Right.
You know, London is kind of the one that everyone gives the thumbs up. The infrastructure was there. The transportation was there. They had the space. They had many of the venues already. But for a city to say, you know what, we're going to rebuild all of this stuff. I mean, you look at Beijing right now. That bird's nest hasn't been used for anything.
No, I know.
I am so glad we didn't get it.
I mean, that swimming cube.
It's a waste.
I mean, it was gorgeous when it was there. It was amazing,
right.
But now what? You know?
Remember a year ago, somebody had the idea. I don't remember whose idea this was. They said there should be a permanent place where
Some
the Winter Olympics are
said
always.
That to us.
Did somebody say that to us
yeah.
on the phone? But I love that idea. Because then you don't have these hassles every 4 years, every
then,
2 years, really.
I guess the downside to that is you don't get to see these various countries. They don't get like a boost in their business.
Right.
But it does seem like...
And you don't get under the table money from the IOC, right?
There's that.
Where was the very first
problem.
Olympics? Was it Greece?
Yeah.
Then that's where it should be all the time.
Athens.
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
Why?
You don't think? Greece, well, Greece has its problems.
Greece might not be the best choice.
What about Greece, too? not as renowned, but still a factor.
God, I love that you're back. I've missed laughing.
But wouldn't it make, I mean, yeah, there are the little things we've just pointed out, like them not getting greased, obviously, is the right word. But you'd avoid all these last minute, and by last minute, I mean...
Last second.
It's last second, but for a year now, they've been saying, I don't think Rio's going to be ready. I don't think so.
You could rotate them, too, kind of like the Super Bowl does. You know, you've got your warm weather in dome cities.
Yes.
I mean, you know it's not going to be at Lambeau, but it could be in Miami. It could be in San Diego. Maybe you do that with a London, a Berlin,
a bad idea.
Mexico City, an L.A., or something like that, and just kind of rotate them around.
I like that.
I like it.
That's a smart idea.
Just not here.
I am so glad.
Me too.
You know, it seemed almost unpatriotic to say this at the time, but I was thrilled when we didn't get them. It would
Me
have
too.
Been such a hassle.
That was so disappointing sitting
were
there in
you?
Daley Plaza.
Were you disappointed?
Oh, Obama was, you know, I mean, we seemed to have all the mojo going in our favor. When you read about it afterwards and realize we didn't play the game, we didn't pay to play, you know, it makes
right.
you kind of understand where we were at.
And how did that happen, Ryan? Because we're a city built on corruption and greed and payoffs. And that's what the Olympic Committee is.
There was a big battle at that point, though, over TV rights, you know, and the U.S. saying, you know, the U.S. Olympic Committee saying, wait a minute, we are driving so many people to watch these games.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, the IOC not really, they weren't in good standing, the two sides, the IOC and the USOC. So
right.
that may have played a role in it. I got to tell you, I do think that we are a city like London with the infrastructure. I mean, there were some really cool concepts in Washington Park of a stadium that could be condensed after the games were open.
Condensed to what, though? What
well,
would it
remember,
become
remember, they were almost temporary stadiums that would essentially just fold away and fold down in some of these parks. They were talking about the Olympic Village would obviously be a well-needed, you know, modernized housing on the south side of Chicago that, you know, to
they
this day.
They would have converted it to housing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, we wouldn't probably, I mean, maybe there would have been some more upgrades to the roads, but when the people fly in, they're not going to be driving everywhere. You know, they're going to be taking the L, they're going to be taking the bus, there are going to be plenty of other opportunities. So, I don't know. I go either way. You know, we've got crime, obviously, in this city that we've got to wrap our hands
would
around.
Would that have been an Olympic event if it was here in Chicago?
We'd
they
win.
Made crime? We would absolutely. Absolutely win.
We'd take home the
gold medal.
We do cross country through some of the most dangerous neighborhoods. See how fast they run.
All the records would be broken.
Yeah, right.
Hi, Lee. How's it going?
Hey, real fine. How are you guys?
Real Great. Fine.
Hey, I think you're going a little bit too easy on Rio on this deal.
Is that possible? How come?
They had 6 years to prepare. I think it was about this time in 2010 that we got the bad news, and so it takes time, which they had. It takes a lot of money, which some countries don't have, and it just takes good planning. And look, there have been several great venues over the last 20 or 30 years. Montreal did a great job. L.A. did a great job. You know, other countries, I think, going way back.
Montreal was in the 60s, wasn't it?
You might be thinking of the World's Fair. I think Montreal might have been 76.
Oh, was it in the 70s? All right.
Yeah. In any event... you know, but you make a really good point when you also say it's about money in other ways, too. You know, the under-the-table money.
But, Lee, you saw the thing that even when Rio was awarded the games, it took them so long to get construction started. Like, you would think they would have jumped on it, but there was so much planning. And of course, that makes sense. You don't want to just build structures at random. But it took them so long to get the ball rolling, and I think that's ending up costing them now.
I agree with that 100%. And perhaps... maybe it caught them a little bit by surprise, and they really weren't doing the pre-planning that they needed to do.
Oh, maybe.
It should have been finished.
I gotta believe Chicago was kind of thinking we were going to get it.
Yeah.
And
what did you think, Lee? Did you want the Olympics here, or were you relieved when we didn't get them?
No, I live out in the suburbs, so it wouldn't have the impact on us like it would, like my son was living in the South Loop. And it could have been real tough on him and his wife, but no, I would have been fine with it because it just how good it is for the city, you know, with the businesses, you know, the hotels, restaurants, other venues that, you know.
Now I know this is an outrageous question, but would Friends of the Park have objected at all to the things? I remember looking at the maps of what they wanted to do along the lakefront. So would they have been involved in this as
yep.
well, you think?
I do think so.
They would.
I think so, yeah.
So that would have been an interesting twist.
There would have been some cool venues on Lake Michigan, though, I think, with the rowing and some of the swimming competitions and stuff like that they had been pitching. I thought that that was kind of a cool concept. And remember, too, not all of the events were going to take place in Chicago.
Right.
We were
right.
talking about, you know, maybe even putting some in Milwaukee, maybe moving some into the suburbs. You know, we obviously have venues like Arlington Racetrack. We've got, you know, lots of sporting venues at Northwestern, at U of I, that they could have moved some of those events to as well.
Sure. Lee,
right.
thank you.
Thanks, Lee. We appreciate it. And Ryan, you're doing a fantastic job on those Olympic hopefuls, and that's what made me think about these poor kids. This is their first shot at the Olympics.
And maybe only.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people are bailing, and
I asked all of them about Zika. I asked all of them about the conditions there. They don't care.
They
want to go there and they want to compete.
They?
I mean, let's face it. A lot of them are hyper focused right now. They've been living their lives to this point. They're not going to be scared off by mosquitoes. And the other thing to point out, too, is the USOC has given them a ton of information on Zika. They're testing them all before they go. They're testing them during. And the best part, they're going to follow through weeks and months afterwards to make sure that they're not showing symptoms of Zika or anything like that. So
they feel
that they've got some assurances that, you know, they'll be in good shape.
And that's a risk they have to take. Boy, if you work so hard and you get a chance to compete in the Olympics, ain't nothing going to stop you.
Yeah, I guess. I imagine. All right, a quick break and then a lot more show. If you want to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. We have a bunch of texts in regards to what we were just discussing, and that is the Olympics, past and present. And what if they were in Chicago instead of in Rio? We just had a caller, Lee, talking about the water cube. If you'll remember, when they had the Beijing Olympics, I think all of the water-based events were held in this water cube.
I don't remember that.
You don't remember it? It was really very cool and futuristic looking.
Like it was glass so you could see them dive in?
Not totally glass. I'm trying to remember exactly how it worked. It was a cool looking structure, very futuristic looking. A texter 708 says the water cube in Beijing is actually now Japan's largest indoor water park. They have a website. Sadly, though, so many past venues are just crumbling, abandoned ghosts. And they are. I've seen pictures of them. You know, the plan is always when presenting it, when presenting your city to the Olympic Committee, is that these are structures that will live on forever, and they find uses for them. I remember in Chicago they were talking about building a giant soccer stadium. I don't think it's one that was collapsible. I think it was one that was going to be permanent. And then the question came up, do we need a gigantic soccer stadium of that size? I'm not positive we do. I don't know what else they would have used it for.
Well, the World Cup. I mean, that's one of the criticisms of Soldier Field, right? It's not big enough to get the World Cup if the U.S. were ever to get the World Cup bid back.
But that would just be, when you think about it, it would be such a small slice of time.
You're right.
What would we do with the rest of it? I guess birthday parties and bar mitzvahs.
Well,
you could
exactly.
Rent it out.
And then, you know, you'd start thinking, well, would the Chicago Fire want to slide in there? But then Chicago Fire have their own stadium down, you know, in the south suburbs. So.
Yeah.
The water cube I am looking at a picture of, and it is a giant water park right now. It is so cool. It just looks like it's a square cube of bubbles.
Yeah, well, I think that's projected onto it. I'm trying to remember if that's always there or if that's just one of the things they can make it look like. I can't remember. It's been a couple of years. Also, we were talking about the Montreal Olympics, and I was right. They were held in the 60s. It says 1967, but aren't the Olympics
that doesn't make sense.
In an even year? They'd be 1968 would have been those Olympics, right?
God, you're good.
68, and then it was Berlin 72?
Maybe. I just remember Montreal being in the 60s because I think they used their biggest stadium. I think it's called Jerry Park. I'm almost positive that's where the Expos played for a while, I think. Does that sound right, Ryan?
Not positive. No, it's a little before my time.
All right.
I just remember all the Wheaties boxes and all that with Montreal. The glass was actually bubbled and everything.
Up above, right?
Yeah.
Is that how? Yeah.
God, that's so cool.
Yeah.
I'm glad they're using it because we saw pictures of, where was the last one? Sochi?
Yeah, the Sochi Olympics.
And everything is just like ramshackle.
Yeah.
It's really bad.
They really struggled to get that thing together. And remember, the paint was still wet when the athletes were moving in.
Yeah.
And the Winter Olympics is by no means as large. I mean, we're sending 550 Americans to the summer games. I mean, the winter ones is considerably smaller. And they still couldn't get it done in time. Well, pretty close.
When did they start?
Less than a month, Ryan. When is the opening ceremony?
Oh, it's Friday.
Oh, it's Friday?
Friday.
That's less than a month.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know it was that soon. Wow.
It's really creeped up upon us, and I have to watch. I love watching the opening ceremonies, and I like the floor exercises, and I like the diving. And the ice skating.
Yeah.
I guess
you
I
won't
do.
See any ice skating.
We got a lot of swimmers from Illinois that are going to be competing this year. It's Illinois swimming well represented this year.
That's good news.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Olympics are coming your way. 312-981-7200. We're going to take a quick break. It's a Tech Tuesday, so at 10:45, we are going to talk to Ashley Esqueda and find out what's going on in the whole tech world. I'm now on level 4 on Pokemon Go.
Make sure you mention that. Tell her. She will be very proud of
Kevin,
you.
Kevin, look at his face. What level are you on?
How are you only level 4?
Because I only play it like a couple times, and, you know, if I open it when I'm home, there are no Pokestops.
I have a story for you about Pokemon Go that I think will enrich your life.
Excellent. I look forward to that.
We'll do that after the news. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right. A correction or two or three or four or five. Several callers and texters all put the Olympic cities in the correct order for us. There was some confusion. Here's the it's gone now. And see if you notice a pattern. They all start with the letter M. I don't know how that happened. Mexico City was in 1968. Munich, Germany, was in 72.
It's Munich, not Berlin.
Montreal in 76, and of course, Mundelein in 1980.
News time right now at 10:30. This sponsored by MitsubishiElectricChicago.com. Here's Ryan Burrow.
Ryan, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder here for you. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. Yesterday, I'm sure you'll remember this, Wendy, we played some audio that was extremely disturbing of a woman who decided to go shopping in a Walmart. She brought one of her daughters in with her to the Walmart, but claimed she forgot about her other child, a one-year-old, who she kept in a baby seat in the back of a car that got up to around 120 degrees. The baby was in there for roughly an hour, somehow came away unscathed, no harm to the baby, which is a miracle.
That is astounding, because I thought, like, you get brain damage if you're put in hot situations like that for, it was 45 minutes.
45 minutes, yeah.
Good
so,
God.
So the follow-up on that lady, by the way, and we alluded to this yesterday, but $50,000 bond and a hearing that's coming up on August the 4th. So that would be Thursday. The baby is fine somehow and was released into the custody of the father. The story didn't say whether or not the parents were still together or not, but they mentioned that the father is currently serving as guardian to the baby. All right. So now a story that is certainly on par with that.
What are you, just the Billy Downer?
I am Billy Downer.
I know
ABC
the
News. I'm
alliteration.
ABC News is Billy Downer. Now this. Listen to this. When deputies arrived at the Arizona home, they found a barefoot two-year-old who was wearing just a diaper and a T-shirt trying to get inside, this according to a news release. The child was red-faced, sweaty, and dirty. The release of the Pinal County Sheriff's Office states all this. Authorities found three dogs when they searched the Santan Valley home. They didn't find the child's parents, however. Eventually, though, deputies located a telephone number for the man that they thought was the child's father. When they called and told him that his child was found abandoned, his reply was, "Whatever," and he hung up on the deputies. The boy's parents, 27-year-old Brent Daly and Breanne Daly, age 25, were arrested on charges of child endangerment and child neglect after the incident, which occurred late last month. The couple told authorities that they left the toddler alone while they were playing Pokemon Go.
I knew where you were going with this. First of all, shame on them.
Yes.
Second of all, why would you admit that?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, really?
I think right from the very start, when the answer is, we found your child and your child is alone, and your answer is, whatever, you're probably dealing with two people that aren't that sharp, probably.
And quit calling me because I'm right in the middle of catching something.
Trying to find one of the monsters.
Pidgey is about to be caught.
Our agency and many other law enforcement agencies have been warning people about personal safety while playing the interactive smartphone game, but we never would have imagined the parents would abandon a child so that they could play Pokemon Go. This according to Sheriff Paul Bubeau, who said in a statement, "This goes beyond comprehension."
It totally does. And, you know, I feel like I'm too old to be playing it. This is a 27-year-old. And the guy who solved it is 28. He caught all of them.
Oh, he did? So can people stop playing? Is it
no,
over?
No, it's just something to do. Kevin is just looking at me shamefully because I'm only on level three.
Kevin's going to abandon us at some point. He's just going to go.
At some point.
He's gonna,
already has.
He's just going to
go.
Yeah,
I'm actually going right now.
Are you leaving
level?
For the...
My current level?
No. Your old level. Yes, your current level.
17 going on 18, so, you know.
Sing the song from Sound of Music.
I don't know that one.
I am 17 going. Come on, do it.
I don't know it. I know the Pokemon song. Oh.
That's a proud moment.
I want to be the very best. I'm not going to go into it.
You name your price, and if you'll sing that at the wedding, I will meet that amount. I want you to go up on the altar and sing that song.
Shoot big. Aim high.
Can I, like, adjust the lyrics to be fitting into this? No.
No, oh, I want the real Pokemon lyrics.
That might
wedding.
Ruin the wedding, though, in some people's opinion. Not mine.
Are you talking the reception?
No, I want it done at the ceremony.
Oh, yeah, don't.
I also, here's my fear for your ceremony, Kevin, is you'll be up there on the altar, and then you'll get some sort of a text alert, and you'll wander off to go find a Pokemon monster during the ceremony.
I mean, if a Charizard shows up, that's pretty rare. I mean, I could get married any day, right?
I guess so. Actually, no, the more I think about it, maybe not.
It's bad when my teenage boys make fun of you with your
Are
Magic
they making
the Gathering.
Fun of,
yeah.
of Kevin? Are they?
You, listen, I haven't picked up Magic the Gathering. Now that I got Pokemon Go in my life.
Oh, no.
Can I tell you, I felt so stupid yesterday. I went to Target on the way home, and I see all the different flavored Oreos because that's the only place that has them. And Stephanie Menendez, it's like crack. She gave us the blueberry ones. I see them. I have to buy them now.
Right.
And I went there to get a couple of items, and then Dylan calls. He's 13 and a half, and he says, could you pick me up a tin of Pokemon cards? I said, do you know how many we've thrown out? I'm not getting this.
Why do you throw them away? Do they expire?
Well, we were cleaning the house, and no one played with them anymore.
So you just tossed them.
All right. I don't know. I think we did. They're probably in the attic somewhere.
But will this story be akin to... like people in our generation who said, I had $20,000 worth of baseball cards and my mom just threw them out.
No
well, this,
way.
It won't be the same. Will
I
it?
Can't imagine. Right. So, you know, he begged me, you know, and Dylan Smart, he always says, I want to play with my brother. Don't you want us to get along? And
Can
I'm
you
like,
hear your heartstrings being tugged at?
It's like he's playing a harp on my heartstrings. So I bought the stupid tin. It was like $10.99 or something. And the girl is ringing me up, and she said, oh, the Pokemon craze, you know, these little kids love it. I said, he's not little.
Yeah, 13.
He's 13. I can't believe I'm rebuying them.
Right.
And I had to FaceTime Dylan to show him which things were hanging there. And he saw Magic the Gathering. He goes, why don't you get that for Kevin?
You know, I like Dylan more and more every time.
Oh, yeah, sure, of course.
But, I've ordered a couple Pokemon books for them. This is stuff
books,
that...
Books, like novelizations of their
stories?
It lists
all the monsters or whatever.
Oh, yeah, you want to know, like, their average height and weight.
Their
and
power.
Where to find them.
What do you do with that information? What do you do once
you internalize it.
Yeah, all right.
All that information that you have, Bill, from baseball cards back in the early 70s, where did that information go?
It's still in there.
And think about it.
I can't lose it.
It's
Who
the
is the
same
third baseman
thing.
For the Expos?
Pete McCannon.
There you go.
Right,
it's just just like finding a drowsy.
Yeah, I guess.
You say that it's, you know, knowing the baseball stats are important. To kids today, the Pokemon stuff
is.
Yeah,
I guess so.
They're both a waste of time, if you want my opinion.
I know. But the girls love it.
Yeah. All right. That's a horrible story. You know
that is a horrible story. These parents should be put in jail forever, and not have their cell phones with them in the cells because that would.
Oh, they don't let you have your cell phone.
He again, 27 years old. She again, 25 years old. And his answer when the authorities contacted him, saying they found their little 2-year-old, was whatever. And then he hung up on them.
But see, the story yesterday where this horrified mom came out and forgot she left her baby in the car, which I know you don't believe, but her reaction really showed that maybe, you know, on Mondays, grandma takes the infant.
Right.
And she thought it was Monday. I mean, I know it's hard to believe, but that seems like a complete oversight. Again, irresponsible, and she should be charged. But these two are just...
These are just idiots.
Yeah.
They just really are. And the more I thought about yesterday's story about that woman who, you know, we played the audio of her just crying
Frantic.
And screaming, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. Don't you think part of that, I know this sounds cold, but part of that was because she was caught.
No.
You don't think so?
If you're caught, you'd be like, oh, I was just going in for a minute. I'm telling you, that was complete fear and disbelief that she could have done something like that.
45 minutes?
She didn't think the baby was in the car. She forgot she had the baby that day.
I guess.
So she went shopping.
That's just so hard to fathom that much time, and that there were two of them. There was her and her daughter. Like, one, you go, well, maybe her mind was on other things, but at some point, wouldn't one of them have said, we brought the baby, and now the baby's not with us? And so many people texted us saying, I bet that wouldn't have happened if it was her cell phone. She wouldn't have been without her cell phone for 45 minutes. I don't know the woman, so it's not fair to comment, but I kind of get that.
I get it, too.
Kind of people who keep reaching in going, yeah, my phone's there. What else am I missing?
It's a terrible tragedy, and thankfully the kid's okay.
That's a miracle.
With this family, I mean, come on.
They should. I know this sounds extreme, but don't you consider taking this kid away from two parents that are that awful at being parents?
Yeah, but then you look at the other side of it. Is it good for a kid to go to foster homes or something like that?
How old was the kid in the story? I didn't catch
two.
Two. Isn't this something like a 2-year-old can kind of have fun with?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
Boy, don't have kids for a while.
No, Pokemon
okay?
Go? You can't bring it. You can't.
It's not Lord of the Flies.
Oh, he means bringing
the kid with. Yeah, that's
yes. To play the game. Yeah that. Yeah.
not living solo.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Like, you know, just concentrate on the marriage.
Babies can fend for themselves. Yeah. It's a 2-year-old. Come on.
Good God. All right, we have to take a break, and then it's a Tech Tuesday. We'll talk to Ashley Esqueda from CNET TV, host of Tomorrow Daily. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. It's a Tech Tuesday, and Bill Leff is a tech wizard.
Thank you for recognizing that,
Not.
Wendy.
Wizard dress, Ashley Esqueda, is on the line with us, senior editor at CNET TV, host of Tomorrow Daily. How are you, Ashley?
Good. How are you guys?
We're doing well, and is there a new phone or a new camera from Galaxy Note? A friend of ours in the production department, Jason, showed me his new phone, and Bill, it is so cool. There's this, like, the glass is kind of domed a little bit,
yeah.
And if it's on its side, you can read your email on the side.
Oh, really?
Of the glass.
That's interesting.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's got it. That would be one of the Galaxy Edge phones. So, but today, actually, early this morning, breaking news, we're just getting everything in. The Galaxy Note 7 was announced, and those are the really big, they call them phablets. They're really large phones. This is Samsung's sort of version of that, and it's the one with the stylus they call the S Pen.
And you know, these phones are getting so big, they don't fit. You know how most jeans have two pockets in
right.
the back? You're going to now need just one big pocket
oh,
in the back.
Oh, that'll be pretty. That'll look nice.
Yeah, so just merge both pockets across the back. It seems really good.
Is phablet...
Well, this is a 5.6.
Can I ask,
phablet, sure,
is that fat tablet? Is that what that means?
PH, like phone
yeah,
and tablet.
Phone
oh, is that what that means?
Tablet.
Oh, phone and tablet,
yeah.
Okay.
So it's 5.7 inches. It's a really big phone, and it is a curved screen, like you were saying, Wendy, just like the Edge. And so this is sort of new territory for the Note, but certainly not new territory for the Edge or Samsung, because they're used to making these phones. It has expandable storage, which is something a lot of Android users really like, which means you can put an SD card inside and add to the storage space of your phone, something that the iPhone doesn't have.
Why doesn't it have it, Ashley?
So a lot of times, I think what we're seeing is, one, we used to actually have a lot of expandable storage phones. And over time, we've sort of seen them dissipate, mostly because of cloud computing. So you're able to actually just keep all your files in the cloud, which means you don't actually need a lot of local storage. Particularly on the iPhone, this is sort of like a point of contention. I think a lot of people would like that. And there are products that actually allow you to have expandable storage, but you actually have to plug them into your phone. So there are cases and products that you can buy that are sort of peripherals that you can add storage to. But it's not like Samsung, where with this Note 7, they're allowing you to actually just put in an SD card, and that's part of your phone storage.
All right, that makes sense to
me. That makes more sense. All right.
Yeah, it's one of those weird things where I think for a little while before cloud computing really took off, we started seeing phone manufacturers drop support for that, and people were really upset, and rightfully so, because there really wasn't the infrastructure for people to, you know, access all of their files and photos on the cloud. But really, the one or two big things that you have on your phone, photos and video, obviously take up a lot of space. And then, of course, your music is another thing that takes up a lot of space, but we've seen a lot of that move to cloud and streaming services. So that's sort of one of the reasons a lot of phone manufacturers don't bother. It's just an extra component that could break or go wrong or have a problem. So they've just axed it and let people use cloud services.
Bill, I know you're a fan of the Tesla, and
yeah, I
don't care at all. I'll never have one.
Yeah.
I can never afford one. But Tesla is in the news every minute of every day, isn't it, Ashley?
It is. And Wendy, just so you know, the Model 3 is going to come out next year, and it's a $35,000 Tesla. I know that because I pre-ordered one.
Oh, did you pre-order
one? Really?
I did. They opened pre-orders on my birthday this year, and so I went down to my local Tesla and stood in line with a bunch of other people, and I pre-ordered one. So I'm like, I've never pre-ordered something so far out, a year and a half before it's released, and I hadn't even seen it at that point, but I knew I wanted it. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do it, and then if I hate it, I'll just go get my deposit back. But they're going to have a $35,000 Model 3 that's going to be out late next year.
It's pretty cool.
It's a good-looking car.
Yeah, it's really neat. It's like a smaller Model S. It's like a sportier, smaller Model S, which is pretty neat. But yeah, Uber is always in the news. Tesla is always in the news, I should say. Tesla and SolarCity are merging. So this is really interesting. So SolarCity was founded, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, by Elon Musk's cousin. He's one of the co-founders, I believe. And now SolarCity is going to be merging with Tesla in a $2.6 billion all-stock deal. So this is all paid for with stock. And basically, Elon Musk had said, this is now the right time. So we couldn't keep SolarCity as a subsidiary earlier because we really didn't have the infrastructure that we wanted to build. Now we just opened this massive gigafactory in Nevada. We're still expanding that. It's going to be this gigantic 800,000-square-foot facility. And so he said, now's the time. And what we want to do is Tesla makes not just cars, but they also make things like the Powerwall. So they announced this object that you can install in your garage. And if you have solar power coming into your home, it will collect that solar energy. And then you can either keep it for your own home or you can sell it back to the grid. So it's a way to sort of be off the grid, if you so chose. And before, they were planning on just partnering with solar companies. And now it looks like with SolarCity as part of Tesla, they will be able to offer this sort of fully integrated package of bringing solar power to your home. So this is sort of the plan that Tesla has. And they felt that it really wasn't time and they had to let SolarCity mature a little bit. And also Tesla had to mature a little bit before they were able to merge.
It's finally turning into the Jetsons.
It seems like it, yeah. Huh.
And we only have about 30 seconds here, but I'm a big fan of the White Stripes and Jack White. And what did he do in the outer spatial world?
This is my favorite. We talked about this yesterday on Tomorrow Daily. Third Man Records is Jack White's record label, and they sent the Icarus craft, which is a small craft, to the edge of our atmosphere, to near space. And they sent it 94,000 feet up, and the craft had a spinning record on it. So they were able to send a vinyl record up to space. As my co-host said yesterday on Tomorrow Daily, what's more hipster than vinyl in outer space?
What is it going to do? Who's going to hear it? Is it still spinning? What's going on?
Yeah, I think they just wanted to send something up there to see if they could continuously play some music on the way up. And then I believe on the way down, they kept the record spinning, but they kept the needle from touching the record because of the turbulence so that it wouldn't scratch. But on the way up, it was playing a remix of Gloria's Dawn by Carl Sagan, which is sort of perfect because Carl Sagan was part of the group of people who chose the record to put on Voyager, the very first probe that we sent out into space. And so we have a gold record mounted on there way out and beyond Pluto. We have a gold record that has hello in a few different languages. There's other stuff on there like Chuck Berry's Johnny B. Goode. There's music. There's different languages and all kinds of different stuff. So it's actually a really fun thing to learn about if you don't know about the Voyager mission and the gold record, which
That's
is pretty
so cool.
But this is sort of an homage to that, if you will.
And the goal here, Ashley, obviously, is to get interplanetary life interested in vinyl again, right? Is that the goal?
Yeah, well, of course.
Of course.
I mean, that's the best. They want to say, hey, look, we know you probably have advanced digital music technology, but really, don't you just want to listen to a record?
Listen to the Christmas. Yeah, I get it.
That's right.
All right.
Thank you so much, Ashley. You can find her at CNET.com. She is the host of Tomorrow Daily. Thank you so much for shedding some light on some great things on a Tech Tuesday. We appreciate it.
Sure. Anytime, guys. Bye.
Bye, Ashley. All right, a quick break. News is next, and then a lot more show for you. Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. It is 720 WGN. Thank you so much, Ryan. We appreciate it. Ryan, are you right-handed or left-handed?
I'm a righty.
I am a right-hander.
Wow. That must be rough to just be able to only use one hand.
You know, if people brag about really stupid things sometimes.
Yeah.
But you take the cake.
Why do you say that?
Go ahead.
I'm ambidextrous. And you're jealous.
There are a lot of people
who what?
Are ambidextrous. My sister is. She chose a hand.
I can't pick a favorite. I like both of them equally. You obviously favor your right hand, so wouldn't want to be your left hand. No love from you.
Can I tell you a story? My sister-in-law, Sheila, was left-handed. She was born a southpaw.
Yeah.
And
which, by the way, should be an east paw.
You're absolutely 100% right.
Your hand is not coming from down below to do things. It's coming from this side of your body. It should be called an east paw.
All right, we'll bring that up because we're going to talk to somebody. I thought it was now, but it's later. He's written a book, Left Hand Turn Around the World, Chasing the Mystery and Meaning of All Things Southpaw. So that should be your first question.
All right, I'll ask him that.
But Sheila was a little girl, and she was left-handed, and there was a tragic accident where she was going to close the garage door, and she reached in with her left hand.
Yeah.
And the garage door came down on her, severed in between the thumb and the pointy finger. So she had a surgery on that hand and had to learn to use her right hand. So she's right-handed now.
That's an awful story.
So technically, she's ambidextrous, too.
Well, I guess
she is. It's not that special.
You tell yourself that.
Would be if he was a pitcher. That'd be awesome.
There is a guy.
That's my question.
There's a guy in baseball right now who can throw from either side. It's amazing. I don't think that's ever happened before, has it, Ryan? I don't know the guy's name, but he can throw from either side.
Why aren't there more ambidextrous pitchers? Because they would be such a hot commodity.
Even if you are ambidextrous, and I know because I am jealous.
I'm not jealous. It's not that big of a deal.
There is still a dominant side. And with me, it's my right side, but I know people who are
also... I feel sorry for your left side.
Don't feel sorry.
Should I be concerned that at the age of 4, I still don't know what my son is?
Yes.
A righty or a lefty?
Why wouldn't you know
he's
that?
Probably ambidextrous.
He's all over the place, though. I mean, like, he'll grab crayons and scissors and pencils with other hands and start writing. I'm like, does that feel normal to you?
With other hands? How many does
he have? His own, right?
Eight. It's crazy.
Not just a stranger's.
Maybe that's what the problem is.
Do you know what color hair
he's a spider?
Has?
I didn't know if I mentioned he was a spider.
No, he's a spider kid. That's cool.
That would be six, but still. No, I don't. I really, at this point, I don't know what he's taken a baseball bat. He seems to swing fine lefty. Sometimes I see him writing with his right hand.
That's great.
Sometimes with his left. I don't know what to think of it.
That's very good.
The school is going to make him be right-handed.
That's true. When I went to St. Damien for grade school and they saw that I could write with my left hand, one of the nuns said, and I quote, "The left hand is the devil's hand. Why don't you put your pen in the other hand?" The devil's hand? No, it's not.
I would say if I was a nun, I'd tell kids the right hand because most kids are right-handed. And what do you do with that right hand when you're a young boy?
Yeah, I guess.
I don't really write as much anymore, though, right? I guess it's which side is the mouse on?
Yeah, right. Right, because if you're texting, as kids do now, instead of right, you're using both of your hands.
All the teachers, how many left-handed mice do I have to order this year? Oh, great. The number two is it doesn't matter, because you can use whatever hand.
Right.
So the ambidextrous pitcher you were explaining, there is just one. Why wouldn't you do it?
I think he's the only one in baseball because you tend to have, even if you can use both hands, you tend to have one side that's more dominant. And when you're pitching, it's very noticeable. I mean, if you can get a fastball up in the 90s on one side, it'd be rare that you could do it on the other side. But this guy somehow can.
When we were in Nashville, Dylan and I were playing catch in the pool, and we did like a left-handed one, and it's just not, I really try. I try like, okay, it comes so naturally with your right hand.
Right.
You lift it up, you bend your elbow, and you throw.
Yeah.
I had to think about it And I still couldn't do it.
There are great videos on YouTube of men and women throwing with opposite hands. It's funny. Very, very funny.
And they've got almost no control, I'm guessing, right?
Just like, you know, they're kind of leaning forward. It's like they've never done this motion before. And it's just, it's very funny to watch. I encourage you.
Before it was politically incorrect to do something, you know how people go, that guy throws like a girl. Now, you wouldn't hear that anymore because that's wrong. We've learned that that's not a thing that you say anymore. However, that left-handed throwing thing, for some reason, it looks like when people used to say that about people. That guy throws like a girl. When most people throw with their left hand, that's kind of, you're kind of just like almost shot-putting the ball instead of throwing it naturally.
It does look weird.
Yeah, yeah.
I wish I could relive my life because I would become an ambidextrous pitcher.
See what I mean? That's the jealousy.
See, the problem is you still have to be good.
Right.
You can't just right. show up and be like, hey, guess what I can do?
Well, it's practice. Practice makes perfect.
It's even if you practiced.
There's still a Jake Arrieta. There's still a Chris Sale out there who's a lot better than you, you know?
Yeah. You wouldn't be able to. It'd be very hard to just master that, even through practice. You either have that ability or you don't. That's just too hard to learn that.
All right. Well, do you want to know 11 facts about the ambidextrous?
I want to know 6 of them. I don't want to know all 11.
Maybe someday we'll have our first president who is.
Wouldn't that
think
be
about
something,
that.
Ryan?
That
I don't think
amazing.
We'll see that in our
think
lifetime.
Think about that convention.
Yep. 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 That would be fun.
All right, none of this is... Oh, this is something that... I'll just give you one.
What is it?
The ambidextrous are more likely to possess a certain gene on chromosome 2, which is linked to schizophrenia.
Well, that sounds bad. I don't want
I'm
that.
I'm not jealous anymore.
Now I want to get rid of my special talent. That's awful.
What do you do with it? They can be quick to anger.
That's stupid. I can play tennis with either hand. I can play ping pong with either hand. And I used to be able to bat with either hand.
But you prefer the right?
No. When I play, I switch off all the time. I keep, like, if the ball's on that side, I hit it left-handed. If it's on that side, I hit it right-handed.
Since you're ambidextrous, you are easier to sway emotionally.
Maybe. It's possible.
They're likely to report a change in mood based on their surroundings, directed thought, and music.
Why would there be? I don't know why there'd be any correlation to being able to use both of your hands to being swayed emotionally.
I don't know. That's what
they
say.
That seems peculiar.
Ambidextrous people, a study of 8,000 children ages 7 and 8 shows that 87% mixed-handed students, which is what they call now.
Mixed-handed?
Mm-hmm.
Is that more... socially acceptable?
It's just we're going away from the Latin.
Huh.
They had more pronounced difficulties in language skills.
Huh?
They sound like Scooby-Doo.
Right. That isn't gooder.
15 and 16, the same students showed a higher risk of ADHD symptoms and performed academically under both right and left-handed students from the same sample. I know you skipped kindergarten, too.
I did skip
you
kindergarten.
You are a phenom.
I was, yeah.
Bill left the phenom.
An ambidextrous genius.
Look what you're able to do if you really put your mind to it, kids. This is possible.
Right.
This is possible.
Yep. Marlene, you're familiar with the Ambies, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
How
My
come?
Daughter was born ambidextrous. We never knew that until she went to school. And she started writing her alphabet from A to M with her left hand, and then she would write from M to Z with her right hand.
Just showing off.
Is that... Is it showing off?
No, honestly. And the teacher called me. She was all upset. She said, you have to do something. This is not right.
Did she say not normal or not right? What did she say?
She is going to have problems psychologically is what the teacher told me.
Oh, but that's not true.
Well, no, it isn't.
That's not true at all.
My daughter is quite fine. In fact, she played baseball. She's very athletic. She played baseball. She was a horseback rider.
Yeah.
Into jumping and everything like that.
So, Marlene, why do teachers, because I said, my teachers were the same way. They said you have to pick a hand and it should be your right hand.
That's because they only had one pair of left-handed scissors and they didn't want you to share.
There could be something to that.
Yeah. It was the funniest thing, but she got me upset, the teacher did, and I told my husband, I said, do you know they told told me our daughter's going to have problems psychologically if she doesn't pick a hand.
That's terrible.
To this day, she still has not picked a hand. A lot of times, her son will say, "Mom, you're eating with your left hand again." She said, "Oh, well, I just went to Europe."
Well, I do that, too, when I'm cutting food. Like, I do it what they call the European way, the opposite way. I cut with my right hand and I eat with my left.
Everybody does, because you need the, if you're right-handed, you cut with your right hand because you're
more accurate.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm. So you're not European either.
Wait. Now that I think about it, no, stab right, cut left. I know
Whatever.
It sounds like I'm killing people. I'm not. I'm just eating something.
I'm left-handed, and I'm so left-handed that I start walking with my left foot.
Oh, you do? You're left-footed.
I'm left-handed, left-footed, you name it.
How about that?
Well, stay tuned, because we're going to talk to someone who wrote this book, Left Hand Turn Around the World. I was jealous of the lefties, not the ambidextrous.
No, you were. I think you are.
Thank you so much,
Bye, Marlene.
Marlene.
Thanks.
Can you write your name with your left hand and your right hand?
I can't anymore.
Well, then what good is your ambidextrousness?
Well, because of sports. That's where I use it more, you know. Ask the guys I play tennis with or ping pong with.
Get them on the phone.
I'll dial it with my left hand. I'll prove my point to you. All right. A break, and then more show, and then we'll talk to the man who wrote the book for left-handed people. A left hand turn around the world. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. You're darn tootin'.
Jeez.
You know what I'm trying to do is make the show more comfortable sounding.
Folksy?
Yeah, more folksy.
847 just read my mind. Bill, you are a legend in your own mind.
Thank you.
Ryan Burrow mentioned something about his 4-year-old son where Ryan can't determine whether or not he's a righty or lefty. A daycare provider, 630, says, having done daycare for 11 years, most kids start out using both hands. And unless they're going to preschool or pre-preschool, or now in vitro school, which I think they're starting soon. That's when they're going to have to probably pick a hand.
I would imagine. And now I just talked to Ryan off air, and not only did he not know if his son was left-handed or right-handed, but he couldn't remember his name either.
It's true.
That's
true.
It's
hashtag something. It was 2012, people. You got to give me a break, okay?
That's fine.
Oh, my God. When my wife was a child, says 847, she was left-handed. Her mother thought it was evil, so she cut the tendon on her thumb.
Oh, no. Seriously?
That's
awful.
Did you use right-handed scissors to cut that tendon?
That's severe.
My God.
But it's not as severe, but for a teacher to tell you that the left hand is the devil's hand, I remember that going, wait, there's other left-handed kids in the class. They heard that. You can't just tell them the devil's making you write with your left hand. That's awful.
If there's a teacher listening right now, 312-981-7200, I'm curious if you're a preschool or kindergarten teacher, if you try to sway the kid from being left-handed anymore.
And to what end? Why would you do that?
Because the world is easier for right-handed people. It really is. The way
desks
are sometimes.
Right.
Just writing. Kevin, you're left-handed. It's like if you're doing calligraphy, say, won't your hand drag?
And that's a pretty common thing for Kevin. He's always doing calligraphy.
You've seen what I write on your reads and all that.
You have the worst penmanship I have ever seen in my life.
But you can't blame that on Kevin being left-handed.
Yes, you can.
An aspiring doctor, right?
But, you know, when you're doing wet ink, your hand drags through it. That's why I think teachers tried to sway the kids
the
other way.
Oh, maybe.
708 says they wanted my husband to be placed in special education because he was left-handed and couldn't cut with regular scissors because they're not made to cut with someone with a left hand.
That's terrible.
Now I feel sorry for the left-handed people out there.
Absolutely.
Be glad you're ambidextrous. I don't feel sorry for you.
I am. I'm very glad. It was worth the extra $10 when I was born.
But it does make sense, Ryan. Your son doesn't go to any early preschool.
Yeah, he does, but I mean, they're not doing super intensive stuff at this point. You know, he's 4.
And you can paint. Artists paint with both hands a lot of times. Maybe not as well. Playing the piano, I was telling Bill, I took piano lessons.
My aunt was in town. She's from California over the 4th of July holiday. And she said there's one way to figure it out. And she pulled out some keys. And she said, come grab the keys. And so he grabbed with one hand and she goes, there you go. That's how you know.
That was the test?
I guess. Wouldn't you have to do that? I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me,
You'd have to
though.
Do that like 50 times, though, wouldn't
you?
Like one time.
Yeah, I would think so.
I don't think that was a good controlled experiment at all.
Maybe it is. I don't know. I don't know.
But don't you think, like, with keys, because it's a fixed object, you're not really extolling any pressure, or you're not, like, if you're painting, it's not a fixed item. Like, with a
key...
Yes,
it is. You have to be precise.
Yeah, but it's fluid. You're moving it around. Like, a key is in one place, so you can easily train your left hand to just hit that key. But with painting, you have to move the brush from place to place. You know what I mean? It's harder to... Because it's not just one object, you it's up to you to decide where it's going.
It does get a little frustrating, though, because, you know, they're at a point when you're trying to figure out, you know, what they like, what they're good at, and until we can figure out, you know, how he's going to go about doing that.
Right.
You know,
you still love him, though, right?
Yeah, I think so. Right. I think so. Right. Yeah.
My God, hard-hitting questions from one Bill left.
What if he said no? That would be awful. Not as much.
Being able to use both hands with almost equal ease can really pay off, especially in sports, as we mentioned, arts and music.
Yeah.
Some reportedly cross-dominant celebrities and historic figures include Leonardo da Vinci.
He was
ambidextrous.
He was eating Gilbert Grape. He was in What's Eating Gilbert Grape in Titanic.
No, that's DiCaprio.
Right.
Pete Rose is ambidextrous. Pitcher Greg A. Harris, is that who
is
you were
Greg
talking
A. Harris,
about?
Greg A. Harris ambidextrous? Yeah. Oh, he might be the guy who can throw from either hand. Yeah.
Michelle Kwan, Paul McCartney.
I thought he was only left-handed.
I did too. But
All right.
Benjamin Franklin and Harry Truman.
Wow.
Quite so we have broken that glass ceiling, I guess, then, with the presidents.
Yes.
All right. We don't have a ton of time, but we have a kindergarten teacher on the line. Hi, Karen.
Hi, how are you?
Do you still try to sway kids away from being left-handed when they come to your kindergarten class?
Absolutely not. Actually, I'm a left-handed kindergarten teacher, so I love the lefties. It's easier for me.
Good.
Especially when it comes to tying shoes. The parents are like, my child's left-handed and I can't teach them tying shoes. Can you help? So I just, whatever hand they prefer is the hand I go with.
That's the way it should be.
And so there's no shame, and you just supply yourself with more left-handed scissors than you did before?
Exactly, yeah. And you know what? The scissors they make now, it doesn't matter if you're left or right-handed. They're the little ones we use for the kids. They can use either hand with them. And I don't even use a left-handed scissors, and they seem to work just fine, too.
Awesome. Good to know.
We've
Thank
come
you,
a long
Karen.
Way,
All right, and
baby.
Real quickly... Beverly's a kindergarten teacher as well. And you're also a lefty?
I'm also lefty. Many teachers are left-handed because we think with the right side of our brain, and that's the creative side of your brain.
I thought the left side was the creative.
No, the left side's more structured. It's the opposite.
Yeah.
So we think with the right side, which is the creative side.
We're in radio, Diane. We don't use either side, but we've heard stories.
That's why I was confused.
A lot of your teachers are left-handed because of that.
How about that?
And I agree with the last caller. I've never, ever changed a child. And as far as scissors, I've always cut with right-handed scissors. It's never been a problem.
Oh, good.
You know, it's a problem if you make it a problem.
Yeah.
What if a kid is ambidextrous, Beverly? Do you just skip them through kindergarten like Bill did?
Yep, that's how it's done.
Well, in the past, they used to say it's better to have a dominant side.
Yeah.
But now it doesn't really matter. And if a kid is ambidextrous, go for it. I mean, even myself, I'm a former ballerina and everything. And my right side is stronger. So I'm, you know, a little bit, you know, when I golf right-handed. But
you could do the other if you chose.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Nice.
It's a beautiful world.
But it was a long time ago, especially, I hate to say this, but when kids went to Catholic school.
That's what Bill was saying.
They would actually get hit on their hand to change.
Wow.
And, you know.
How did that happen?
I don't know.
How were nuns?
Well, maybe that was that devil thing. I don't know. But I remember another teacher that I taught with when I started teaching a long time ago. And she said they used to actually smack her hand.
With a ruler, probably.
With a ruler. And the thing is, by the time you're age 4 or 5, you are 92% of who you are has been established already. So that dominant side is there already. And now they're saying at the age of
3. It's 85%.
Wow.
Good God. Beverly, thanks for clearing up a whole bunch of things and continued success with your left hand and your right hand.
Both hands, yes.
All right, quick break. We've got news. And then left hand turn around the world, chasing the mystery and meaning of all things Southpaw. And I think we know the first question that you have to ask him.
Why Southpaw? Why not Eastpaw? All right, stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Do you have to say to the left, to the right, because you're ambidextrous?
I am ambidextrous, Wendy, so yes, the lyrics are different for me.
Left hand, turn around the world, chasing the mystery and meaning of all things Southpaw. David Wolman is on the line with us. How are you, David?
I'm well, thank you. How are you guys?
Good. We spent several minutes talking about Bill is ambidextrous and he's very proud of it.
Mm-hmm.
But being left-handed person, it's definitely a right-hander's world. We talked to a couple of teachers who now they're not trying to dissuade the kids from using their left hand, but for a long time, being left-handed was wrong.
Indeed. And you know, it's not just an American or North American phenomenon. Throughout the ages, all over the world, people were not allowed to really do anything important with the left hand. And if you look through the history of literature and even language, left for sinister, left for evil, God seems to be doing everything not so nice with the left hand in the Bible, and everything that seems to be pleasant, he or she or it does with the right hand. So there's this very long legacy of looking down on the left side generally and on left-hander specifically. But, of course, we have all kinds of fun secret advantages, so we've gotten over it.
Before you give those advantages, I told the story earlier, David, but you weren't here. I went to a Catholic school, and one of the nuns saw me writing with my left hand and explained to me that the left hand is the devil's hand. So why would that be? Why would the left hand be the devil's hand?
Well, again, it's really just it's a historical relic drawn from the Bible and from the Latin word for left, sinistra, and it's really just one of those things that I think really up until about 20 or 30 years ago, finally, even sort of nuns in Catholic schools said, okay, maybe we don't really need to be rapping people over the knuckles with a ruler anymore for holding a pencil in the left hand. But again, if you travel to other parts of the world, I remember when I was working on the book, people in China, for example, you shouldn't even comb your hair with the left hand.
But that has to do with the way they, like their bathroom habits, right?
Yeah, there's the
You mean you can't use toilet paper in a particular hand in other countries?
I guess from what I've heard that in parts of Asia, they tend to clean themselves off, wipe themselves with their left hand. So that's all that they want to use their left hand for. Is that kind of right, David?
Yeah, there is a non-trivial hygiene element to this in very poor parts of the world where people eat with their hands. And so
there's something called soap. Do people know this now?
Yeah, you should send them some, Wendy. that's when a community or culture decides, okay, we're eating with this hand and doing other things with the other hand, they're going to settle for eating with the right because, you know, 90% of the group or so is right-handed. And this is this big mystery that I sort of went chasing after a few years ago, this question of why is most of humanity right-handed, and yet this small group of left-handers persist, and we haven't been bred out of the population. What's going on there?
Did Ned Flanders from The Simpsons inspire you to do this project?
He was a very early inspiration, true. And I was the only lefty in a family of six, and you know, from an early age, like a lot of left-handed kids out there, I was fed all kinds of BS, really, about lefties are in their right mind, and lefties are more creative, but they're less this or that. And you know, fast forward a little bit into adulthood and life as a writer and science writer, I wanted to say, okay, well, can we separate the BS from the real science? What is it about left-handers that makes them different, if at all? And why are they sticking around? So this is what I was trying to look for.
And what did you find? Because I know they say left-handed people are more creative, their IQ is higher, but I don't see how there can be a connection to which hand you use.
Yeah, it's tenuous. It's tenuous at best. And so a lot of that stuff is real urban mythology when you hear these very pithy things like lefties are more creative or lefties do have more trouble with XYZ. It's largely garbage, except there is this this wonderful asterisk about the fact that lefties have not been bred out of the population, which means that whatever evolutionary process makes gives us all brains that are mostly right-handed, but some of us left-handed. Whatever evolutionary hiccup that is, it must somehow benefit our population. Otherwise, lefties would be gone already. And so I think it has to do with more like a diversity of thought. Lefties are kind of just coming at the world just a slightly bit differently than right-handers. And that doesn't make them smarter or better artists or this, that. It's just fun to kind of talk that way about lefty legends through the ages. And yet there is this kind of wonderful asterisk, I think, that lefties are just different enough and just interesting enough that evolution hasn't kicked them out of the game.
Well, David, from a numbers standpoint, you're looking at somewhere around 10%, right? 10% of the population is left-handed. Has it always been that way, or has that changed at all over the years?
It's always been that way, but you run into, you know, it's funny when you, the books that I write and love, this idea is you take something seemingly simple and straightforward, right? You're left-handed, you're right-handed, she's ambidextrous. What could be more straightforward? And yet, you look under the hood, like, we don't even really know how to define left and right-handedness very well. So it starts there, right? Yes, it's about 10% across populations. But then you get to this issue of, well, how are you defining left-handedness? And what scientists use today is this thing called the Edinburgh Handedness Index or Survey or something like that. And so they ask people 10 or 20 questions. Do you brush your teeth with your left hand? Which hand do you write with? Which hand do you throw with? Chop vegetables, et cetera. And using that metric, most people are right-handed, about 90% of the population, 10% or so are left-handed, but actually most of us are quote unquote mixed-handed, which means
like you, Bill. He's ambidextrous and very proud of it.
Yes.
David.
Exactly. So, and then you run into sort of scientists who will say, well, nobody is purely ambidextrous, which would mean doing every task with equal capability with either hand versus being ambidextrous in the everyday language sense of it, of saying, well, I brush my teeth with my left, but I write with my right hand, I throw a baseball with my left, and, you know, you get this, and then I'm right-footed and blah, blah, blah. So that's sort of the mixed-handedness reality of everyday life. And it's one of those moments where you're like, lo and behold, things aren't quite so simple.
Yep.
Is left-handedness hereditary at all? You said you're one of, did you say six children, the only lefty?
There are six people in my family, four children. But yes, I'm the only left-hander. And this is one of the cool things that I learned and got to look into is that scientists are pretty confident that this is a genetic trait. So, yes, it's hereditary, but it doesn't breed true. And if you remember sort of ninth grade biology about recessive, dominant, you get this nice, easy math of whether something has a 25, 50, or 75% or 100% chance of being of a trait being passed on. So with handedness, it's a much wackier game, and they're really trying to just sort it out at the moment. The idea is that all people are destined to be right-handed unless you get this one gene. But the gene doesn't make you lefty. The gene is like a dice, and if you roll the dice and you get a one, then you become left-handed. And that's how we end up with these wacky numbers of 90% righties. 10%.
It's like Yahtzee. It's similar to Yahtzee,
it's like
David.
Yahtzee. Exactly.
It is just like Yahtzee. David Woolman is our guest. His book is A Left Hand Turn Around the World, Chasing the Mystery and Meaning of All Things Southpaw. We have many more questions. If you want to jump in, please do. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
We're talking about left-handedness, a left-hand turn around the world, chasing the mystery and meaning of all things Southpaw. We're talking to the man who wrote this book, David Woolman. You can go to his website, alefthandturn.com. And Bill, you had an interesting theory.
David, help me with this. My wife and I have twin daughters. One of them, Kylie, is right-handed. My other daughter, Reese, is left-handed. We've been told by several doctors over the years, including when they were first born, that's normal with twins. One tends to be right-handed and the other left-handed. Is that true?
You know, I've read that as well, but twins are, again, part of this this lingering mystery, I would say, because twins, as most people know, they are genetically identical. And so how is it that you could end up with one who's left-handed, one who's right-handed? And this does fit this theory I was mentioning earlier, which is the role of the dice. And so, in other words, both of your daughters inherit the same gene because they're twins, but then the genes of one of them rolls the dice and gets a one, but the genes of the other kid doesn't. And so that's how you end up with one lefty and one righty. And that seems to pan out. But, you know, one of the bigger messages I think that's really cool is here's this really straightforward, simple distinction between people. It's a visible behavioral difference between me and, let's say, you, Wendy. I don't know if you're right-handed.
Yes, I am.
And yet doctors, you know, when they're doing a postmortem on you and on me, they can't open up our brains and see exactly, oh, there's the spot that made David left-handed and Wendy right-handed. It's still this lingering mystery, even though it's such an obvious trait in our everyday lives. And, you know, I think that's a pretty lovely reminder of kind of how mysterious the brain remains, even in the 21st century.
I have a theory about twins, though. In order to fit in the womb, they're, you know, one is laying head to toe and the other one's head is by the other toes. So one hand is kind of incapacitated, sort of. So it would make sense to me that one would be left-handed and one would be right-handed.
Well, you know, you should raise some money. Do a study,
get some grant money.
Come on, that's a great idea.
Yep.
I know, I'm just leery of journalists with, you know, starting a sentence, I have a theory. I'm the same guy. You know, my wife is the same person. Oh, you know what causes that, I bet? ... And, you know, that stuff rarely pans out.
All right. Wait till you read my book, David. Anne has a quick question for you because we're running out of time. Anne, did you have a question for David Wolman?
I do, and actually what you just said, wouldn't that be nice, and one of the easiest reasons. I was just wondering, if you did a scan and you have the IV dye put in, okay, so if you have someone at rest and you have, this is in real time, so you're watching it, and then you have them with the right hand or left hand, can you tell anything like going on in the brain, like where the activity is happening?
Absolutely, and this is one of the things that's really cool about left-handers. And they do tons of studies like this, by the way, with brain scan activity. And it looks like for most functions, you know, people are recruiting firepower from both the left side of the brain all the time. You know, if you just lift your left finger up and down a little or your right finger up and down a little, those simple motor functions are controlled by the opposite side of the brain. Sorry to be talking so fast here, right? But lefties, interestingly, have brain activity. On aggregate, it's spread out over the whole brain a little bit more than right-handers. And nobody knows if that's good or bad or ugly, but it is a
fact. It just is.
For some functions, lefties are a little less lateralized, a little less biased to one side or the other in how their brains are firing for certain tasks. And if you're left-handed, you take it away. Your takeaway is, okay, we're awesome. If you're right-handed, you just shrug and say, like, who cares? And
right.
If you're a scientist, you say, okay, let's do 30 more studies.
Anne, thanks for the question.
And really quick, David, we have less than a minute, but the phrase southpaw is confusing to some of us. Shouldn't it be eastpaw or westpaw, depending on how the person is facing? Southpaw would indicate it's coming down from below, but that's not right.
No, and it has to do, I think, with the theory that the word was born based on, boy, I can't remember now, the book is a little old, but it's a ballpark that was oriented a certain direction, and the pitcher, who was left-handed, was facing south, or his arm was coming from the south, and a sports writer for that town, I wish I could say it was Chicago, I just can't remember, coined the phrase southpaw to describe the pitcher, and then, you know, here we are today.
That's fascinating.
I didn't know that. That's great. Okay.
Well, a cool book, A Left-Hand Turn Around the World. You can get it for all your left-handed friends, because I've always been jealous of left-handed people. So nice to meet you, David Wolman. Your website, once again?
Just david-wolman.com, W-O-L-M-A-N. Thank
David, it would have been funny if the ink was smeared all throughout the book, just in salute to left-handed.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Maybe next printing. David, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Again, the book is called A Left-Handed Turnaround, The World, Chasing the Mystery and Meaning of All Things Southpaw by David Wolman. Back after this, it's WGN.
Thank you, Kim.
Thanks, Kim.
We didn't hear you.
Anytime.
We didn't hear you.
Part of the newscast, we didn't hear. I don't know if other people heard.
It was dead air, and then we heard Mike Jacobson. So were you talking before him?
I was talking.
Oh, we didn't hear it.
I don't think that part was broadcast.
It was award-winning, darn it.
I don't know. All the buttons were pressed down here. I don't know what happened, but it was some dead air, and all of a sudden, Mike Jacobson, filled the void.
In.
That's really weird.
Oh.
Did you say anything important?
I will tell you that I said the Cubs could win again tonight and sweep the series.
And Cubs are doing pretty well.
They're doing very well.
White Sox not doing so well.
You know, they all ebb and flow. It's still a long season.
Which are we doing right now? I think the White Sox are ebbing or flowing.
I think you might be ebbing. I think the Cubs are flowing.
Yeah, that seems to be the way. And the White Sox did something very strange. You know, they have a trade deadline that was yesterday at 3 o'clock. So normally a team will either be a buyer or a seller because they figure if they have a chance at the playoffs, they'll add a couple of guys. If they don't, they'll sell off some of their players. And the White Sox chose to pretty much stand pat. They got rid of Zach Duke, one of the relief pitchers, but other than that, there were no moves made, which is very curious because you can't be thrilled with the direction that they've been in over the last couple of months.
No, but Chris Sale, that was the big one everybody was wondering about.
Yeah, I'm so glad they didn't get rid of Chris Sale.
They would have had to get something pretty fantastic in return.
They were being offered amazing things from other teams, like 5 and 6 players, like huge, huge packages, prospects, you know, guys, highly touted prospects. But they were getting huge offers, and I'm so glad they didn't get rid of Chris Sale.
Well, I think the reason they kept him is now the Fisker Scissors Company is also supplementing his income.
Yep.
So it's a great deal for the Sox.
He's going to be the national spokesperson for scissors for the next few years. That's great news. I've used scissors a lot more often since Chris Sale's. There used to be a time I would just rip things, and now I'm like, let's get some scissors and cut them up properly like Chris Sale would do.
I used scissors a couple of times this past week, and I have to be honest with you. I thought of him each time I picked up a pair of scissors.
They should make scissors in the shape of him. You know how, like, when you open them and close them, it would be like his legs opening and closing? I don't know when that would come into play. But
you are a marketing genius.
Yeah, I'm working with a marketing firm to try to get Chris Sale scissors.
Good idea.
Salesers, we're calling them, which nobody is
liking at all. Great.
Not a single person has responded favorably.
I'd workshop that a little
bit. Yeah, we're still playing it around with it. I want to quickly mention something that Kim said in the news, the part that we heard.
We heard most of it.
We did hear most of it.
In between commercials and Mike Jacobson, we didn't hear anything.
I just figured Kim was swearing. Because, you know, we've had meetings where they say if they're swearing from Kim, we'll just blank it out for a while.
That's why they have that button they just push. It's called the Kim button.
Right. So I assumed it was that.
Not just me, Bill.
Kim told the story of Eric Trump now defending his father in his stance against the Khan family and saying, I believe the quote is that it was blown out of proportion. Is that what they're saying?
Yes, blown out of proportion.
So here's my thought on that. No, it wasn't. It was not blown out of proportion. He said some horrible, horrible things, and when given a chance, and he's had a couple of chances to rescind a little bit, or at least apologize, or some version of apologize, he's kind of doubled down, as they say in the blackjack world, which is crazy. And I mean, for his kid to go out and say publicly, nah, the whole thing's been blown out of proportion, you, sir, would be incorrect, Eric Trump. It is not being blown out of proportion. He has said some horrible things to a family that lost their son in the war. There's no way to sugarcoat it. It's not blown out of proportion. It's awful.
Yeah, the senior Trump has so far not apologized for his remarks towards the Khans, despite Eric Trump's claim. And then he was asked by Nora O'Donnell, this is from CNN, would your father be willing to apologize and move on? And Eric said, I think that's a great question for him. And he has by calling them a hero. That's not an apology.
It's not an apology. So who just said this to us yesterday? Who were we talking to yesterday where they said, maybe it was Eric Zorn, who said that Donald Trump isn't the kind of person to apologize for things. And maybe you want a president who stands firm on certain things. But when you've made an obvious mistake, and maybe he doesn't see this as a mistake, which is a problem in and of itself, how can you not see this as a mistake to criticize this family, especially the mother?
I know.
Who's so emotional about losing her son that she said, I can't just go up in front of a crowd and talk about him. And then he claims that she was silenced somehow, when it was her who chose to not speak because it's too hard for her to remember her son without breaking into tears.
Eric Zorn read his online piece that he did. So look him up, Eric Zorn, Chicago Tribune. And he was saying this is what Trump should have said, like making sacrifices.
Yeah.
I like, you know, Hillary Clinton and the Obamas. Haven't really
and you,
had.
And you, George Stephanopoulos, right, who asked the right question. There's a way to spin it to say, those of us
none
in
of
the
us
military
have made those sacrifices. Yeah. But then Eric Trump went on to say, in terms of the one question, whether you've made a sacrifice, Eric says, I think my father has. Now, that's certainly not the ultimate sacrifice. The ultimate sacrifice is a soldier dying for his nation, dying to protect the three of us, no doubt about it. And then co-host Gail King interjected, is it difficult for your father to apologize? Eric Trump says, my father's a fighter. I think that's what this country needs is a fighter. And I think he was attacked the other day. He was attacked viciously. And by the way, that's politics. You're going to get attacked.
Yeah.
They're all really good at just, you know, doing the essay question, too.
Well, you know, and Trump has issued a statement about President Obama saying that he's unfit. And it's a really lengthy, really two paragraphs, but one really lengthy paragraph. But basically, he goes back to the same rhetoric saying, you know, Obama, Clinton destabilized the Middle East, that he talks about the emails, he talks about, you know, bad economic recovery. I mean, he goes on and on and on. It's pretty much the same thing he says over and over
again. I've heard him criticize the Obama years in terms of the economy. But then can't he use himself as an example? He thrived during those hard years. Is he just going to say, well, it takes a very special kind of businessman to have thrived in such a horrible economic climate? How does he answer?
Well, the way he words this is they've produced the worst recovery since the Great Depression. They've shipped millions of our best jobs overseas to appease their global special interest.
Can you please explain to me why someone has taken a picture of the Donald Trump logo on a shirt and right next to the behind the collar, there's a little tag that says made in China? Explain that to me.
Well, there are several things. I mean, that's one of the reasons that everybody says he's a little reluctant to release his tax statement is because you're going to see that all these places he's criticizing, he's doing business with and doing well.
All right, Helen wants to jump into the conversation. Hi, Helen. Welcome aboard.
Hi, thank you. You know, up to 2 months ago, I thought I was going to vote for Donald Trump, and now I know I'm not. I mean, I don't like Hillary, but I wish everyone would just quit talking about him. I have not listened to my Pandora radio station as much as I have now.
Just trying to escape it all. Can we just ask you, Helen, why originally you were going to vote for him and what made you change your mind?
You know, he was different, and basically I can't stand Hillary, but now there's no choice. You just have to vote for her because you can't leave him in office. You just cannot let him be our president.
But there wasn't one particular incident, right? It was just it was body of work. It was a series of things.
It's a culmination. He just won't shut up.
Yeah.
He keeps on getting himself deeper and deeper and attacking that mother. That makes me sick. She lost her son.
I still cannot understand the texter yesterday who texted in and said, what sacrifice did the mom and dad make? It was their son who chose to join the military and he lost his life. He made the ultimate sacrifice. What do they? I mean, how can you be so blind and not understand that? Really, I don't get the meanness that everybody has now. I'm not blaming Trump for that, but it just seems like everybody is pointing a finger and everybody, no one's empathizing with anybody.
No, I know.
You know, it's the internet. My son's 45 and he said, you know, Mom, the internet's good, but the internet's terrible. They should do away with Twitter. They should do away with Facebook and Snapchat. And maybe we'd go back to being a decent country again.
It's an interesting theory. I wonder if he's right. He may be onto something. Helen, thank you. We appreciate it.
Okay, quit talking about him so I can
turn. I know.
I leave you on all the time.
Oh, you're nice.
And turn Pandora off some more.
All right,
Us 10 more minutes, okay? Because we have some calls we need to take. Steve is here. Hi, Steve. What are your thoughts?
Hi. I love you guys, number one. You make me laugh. Uh-oh. I drive all day and keep you on.
Thank you, Steve.
But all I can say is, what difference does it make at this point? Someone famous said that. So he said it, move on. He's not the ideal candidate. Trust me, I know that, but he's not one of the standard politicians that we know lies to us and we know has done wrong.
But he seems to be lying as well. Politician or not, I feel like everyone is lying to us.
He catches himself in his own lies, which is kind of refreshing. He admits the stuff outright, where a regular politician would lie to your face, like, I'm going to put the coal business out of business, or the coal industry out of business. And then the next, I want to save your jobs.
And that makes him a worthy candidate for your vote?
There is no worthy candidate. I trust none of them. It's the people they put around them. I don't blame Obama for everything, but the people around him are making bad decisions. Hillary, the people around her make bad decisions. It wasn't her complete responsibility for, I guess it's responsibility, but cause for Benghazi, but a culmination of the people around them are poor.
Steve, can I?
I think they've been there long enough. It's time to get out. They've lost enough lives, and what difference does it make?
Steve, can I use just two quick examples from the last few days with Donald Trump? Example number one is, you may or may not know who the Koch brothers are, but they're huge, huge, huge contributors to the Republican Party. So Donald Trump said the other day that he was setting up a meeting with the Koch brothers, and they backed out of the meeting. Then you cut to the Koch brothers, who go, he imagined that. There was no meeting we were setting up. He just said it, and it wasn't true. He then said something about the NFL, how unfortunate it is that two of the three debates are being held during NFL games, and that he had talks with the NFL to try to persuade them otherwise. And the NFL said, we never had those talks with Donald Trump. What's he talking about? So there's a pattern of that where he keeps making up incidents and things that happened that when you talk to the other side, they go, no, that never happened. He just said it, but it didn't happen. Doesn't that kind of scare you that the guy could be the most powerful man in the world and have that ability to just make up events like that?
Yes, but there's checks and balances when you get down the line to it. There's going to be a Senate, there's a Congress. They'll try to balance those things out. But in business where I'm at, I know someone will tell me something, and then they turn around. No, I never offered that. Never said it.
But there's so much more at stake.
As well, do I trust the Koch brothers? Do I trust the NFL? You know, do I trust any of them completely? Heavens no.
Yeah, but you also said, you know, it, and I'll agree, it is refreshing to get a non-politician in there.
To hang himself, which is okay.
But he is surrounding himself
in politics.
But he's surrounding himself with politicians. Look at Mike Pence, his running mate. And
okay.
That guy scares me, too.
Somebody. You got to surround yourself with somebody. Can you find the perfect person to run for politics? No, they're in business making a living for themselves and other people under them. They don't want any part of politics.
Right.
I looked at politics 25 years ago. No, thank you.
Yeah, I know. That's the sad part of it. That's the saddest part of it.
I don't know that I understand.
The best aren't running.
I don't know that I understand the argument of not wanting a politician to run our country. If you're opening like an electronics store and you're going to look for a manager, you want that manager to have experience in electronics, correct?
Right. People have said if you get on an airplane, you're hoping that your pilot knows something about flying a plane.
Yeah, but I know the pilot that's on the other side right now. I know she flies crooked.
All right, you know what? I'm not cutting you off because of what you're saying. I'm cutting you off because we have to take a break. Steve, thank you so much for participating. And if Lisa and Kathy can hang on, shall we continue this
Absolutely.
When we come back?
Yeah, we're at 312-981-7200. We would love to hear from you. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, it's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, our second half of our show, and we're talking about Donald Trump because...
Ooh.
I know, because we have to. I hate politics, Bill, but we have to talk about this.
We just had a caller who said, I wish you guys would talk about something else. I'm listening to Pandora all the time because I'm tired of all the Trump talk. And you get it, and I get it. It's just, it's almost one of those things that you can't not address because every day... It takes twists and turns that nobody saw coming. This is hands down the craziest election of all time.
Absolutely.
Really,
Lisa, go ahead. We only have a short time here, so get to your point.
Okay, thanks. It's amazing to me during the Republican convention, they couldn't find a handful of people to come out to share in what wonderful way Trump touched their lives, made a positive impact on their lives or did anything that wasn't for his own gain. I mean, whether or not you agree with Hillary or not, she does have a record of 30, 40 years and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of stories of how when nobody was watching and the cameras weren't on, she did good things, you know, and that tells a lot about a leader because when you get to the heart of being a true narcissist or sociopath, definitely they're not going to care about us
Lisa, are you? Are you? There was a speech at the convention from a lady who couldn't walk. She injured her legs, and Hillary Clinton showed up at her wedding. There was this exchange where this woman had said to Hillary Clinton at some point, "All I want to do is dance at my wedding," and Hillary Clinton said, "You will dance." And then she showed up. Hillary Clinton didn't get an invite, didn't know anything about the wedding, and somehow somebody leaked the word, and she showed up at the wedding and gave her a big hug, and she did. She danced at her wedding. It was a really touching story.
Right, and if you notice, of the other stories and the lives she touched, and then they showed pictures, they were from like 12 years ago, and she's still in contact with these people because right. She cares about them. She wasn't just picking any random immigrant or non-heterosexual to pander to the community.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, it was so obviously overtly ridiculous. So that's a real difference in character and personality that just I hope the American people don't ignore, because it's really telling.
Thank you so much. Point well taken. And we promised Kathy. Kathy, we have a very short time here.
I'll talk fast. I think Donald and I are the same age, 68. And I think he suffers from the same thing. Basically, I can't remember what I just forgot. Because how many times for 24 hours after he's spoken, his family and his speakers are changing what he said. And one point was made, whatever they comment, McCain, he was being sarcastic. Does he understand sarcasm is the lowest form of humor? Now, have you ever read Ron L. Hubbard?
L. Ron Hubbard, yes.
Yeah, okay. Actually, do you know, years ago he wrote a book. And in that book it says, you never apologize because you never admit you're wrong. Do you think Donald has a book autographed by him on his bedside table? Never apologize. Never admit you're wrong.
It is a similar stance. It is.
Yeah, it's real close. Okay, you guys have a really good day.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you as well. And let's squeak one in. Dave, we were talking about why it's appealing to have a non-politician to do some checks and balances. Kevin said, you know, you go on a flight, you hope your pilot has experience. Why do you want a non-politician?
I think there's 19 trillion reasons as to why.
We have time for two.
Our $19 trillion reason is the debt that we have as a country, and somebody has to start looking at it from a business perspective. It's nice to be warm and fuzzy to all the people, but the reality is Hillary has never balanced a budget in her life. She has no experience with balancing a budget. I applaud the fact that Trump engaged Pence to be his running mate. He's done a great job in Indiana, and maybe like your caller, three callers ago said, it's who you surround yourself with. You can be a leader and have great people around you, which affords you the liberty to grow the country or grow the business that you're in charge of. But
I agree. You surround yourself with people who know what they're doing, but you also want character. And, you know, he is the face of our country. And you're cool with that?
Wendy, I don't dispute that. And I personally think that both candidates are useless. But if I'm looking at my kids or my grandkids and their future, $19 trillion in debt this country is. You know, and it's time where we stop giving things away. Somebody has to pay for the things that we give away. And it's sad to say, but this country has become a country and a society of entitlement. And there's a saying that says successful people give thanks, where unsuccessful people have a sense of entitlement. And there's a lot of truth to that. And this country is just, you know, hard work and building yourself to do what you have to do is a time of the past. And people just think they're entitled to everything, but they don't realize that somebody's got to pay for it.
I totally agree with you. And thank you so much for sharing your thoughts, Dave. We appreciate it.
Have a great day. It's great to hear you back on, Wendy. Listen to you from the loop, Dave. So.
Oh, thank you, Dave.
Let's do this. We need to take a break. We'll discuss this and other topics. Plenty of other things going on, believe me. So stay where you are. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder on WGN. Kim, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy.
Whoa.
Whoa, whoa.
Whoa, whoa. Whoa. I'm trying to do my Bernie Sanders.
Do one more.
Whoa, whoa.
That's pretty great. I would imagine you could probably rent yourself out for for after dinner talks, as
just
Bernie
to
saying.
Say that.
Yeah, just say that.
Can I just tell you one thing I noticed from the Democratic National Convention?
Sure.
When Hillary was thanking Bernie Sanders, and it seemed very heartfelt, like, you know, he really got the passion hyped up, which he did.
Yeah.
They just would show, the camera would move to Bernie Sanders, and he's just sitting like you are right now with his hands crossed.
Seemed,
you know,
a little disgruntled.
Yeah, like it. And then when he finally must have looked up and, oh, crap, the camera's on me. Here's a smile.
Yeah, it seemed a little forced. He did applaud a couple of times.
I know, but he's miffed.
But I think it's because he thought Celine Dion was coming out. He's a big fan. All right, we had a caller a little while ago. We were talking about Donald Trump. He's running for president.
Yeah, I hear.
And we had a caller who called up and said, and I understand this, and I think you understand this, I'm just tired of it always being politicians. I want somebody who's not a politician. I think that's our best play, is to get a guy in there or a girl in there who's not a politician. And there's a lot to be said for that. There really is. And then we debated that a little bit. You know, if you're,
and I said to Dave, do you really want this man to be the face of America? He goes, I hear what you're saying.
Right.
But given the options.
Right.
So we agreed.
Right.
To disagree.
Right. Right. All right. So many people have said of Donald Trump, this is a very highly successful businessman. And maybe it's better for the country to run it like a business. Maybe don't look at it as anything but a business. If Donald Trump knows how to get in there and turn a business that isn't doing well into a success, why couldn't he do that with the country? Okay, that's a good idea. Donald Trump has said many times, and we'll play you a little bit of audio, that the thing about his business tactic is that when he's done with a business deal, everybody's happy. It benefits him and it benefits the other party. And that's what he wants to bring to the White House, is that sense of, it is a business deal, essentially. But when I do a business deal, everybody goes away happy, right? He has said that on several occasions. All right. Now, there's a guy named Andrew Tesoro. I found this over the weekend. It's at Forbes.com. You can look it up yourself. Andrew Tesoro is a man who had business dealings with Donald Trump at the Westchester golf course in New York. He spent a lot of time and effort and energy and money into building the clubhouse for Donald Trump's golf course. Now, he's a good example of Donald Trump's statement of, when I do a deal, everybody walks away happy, because as you'll hear from Andrew Tesoro, that business deal did not go very well, and he will explain why.
I do feel a disclaimer is needed here. This video was released by the Hillary Clinton campaign.
All right. That's fair. No,
okay.
That's fair.
All right.
You should know that. But he is one of the people who have come forth, and there have been others who have said, even though Donald is claiming that when he does a business deal, it's good for all parties, I can tell you from experience, it doesn't always go that way. So here's a little bit of Andrew Tesoro's story.
I'm going to be your champion. I'm going to be America's champion.
Here he is in the very ballroom where I got bullied out of many thousands of dollars, making promises that are just like the promises that he made to me and didn't keep. Donald Trump hired my small business to design a clubhouse for the Trump National Golf Club. Trump, in a meeting, made this big circle and wrote, "Love over here."
I built an extraordinary business on relationships and deals that benefit all parties involved.
I sent a bill. It wasn't paid. The Trump Organization said they would meet me at the clubhouse. There were probably 15 Trump Organization people. They were going to offer me way less than half, barely a little more than a third of what we had built. I felt humiliated because here I was in the ballroom that I worked so hard to design, and they basically ganged up on me. I didn't feel that I had a lot of choice but to accept their lowball offer. You know, I had already paid out that money. That was money gone. That was just absorbed by me personally. So we sent that invoice, and it wasn't paid. I went and I met with Mr. Trump in his office, and he said, you know, I really don't think I should pay anymore because I spent too much on this building. I had already accepted less than the total monies due to my firm. And he basically said he only wanted to pay me half of that amount. Mr. Trump's attorney said if I were to sue the Trump Organization, I would probably get that money. But he made very clear to me that it was his job to make sure that it took me so long and so much money that I was probably wise to accept this very meager sum of money at the end of the day.
So he took... He lowballed him,
right.
And then the guy says, okay, Andrew Tesoro says, all right, whatever, I just want to get this done.
Yeah.
And then Trump comes back with half of that.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought when you shake on a deal...
you would think that that's the deal, right? And my guess is he even had the sums in writing at some point.
You'd think there'd
millions
be a written
of dollars,
contract.
There should be a contract. But other people have come forward and said essentially the same thing, is that... When Donald Trump or his company agrees on a price, that doesn't necessarily mean the price that you're going to end up seeing, because at some point he or his people will say, well, we didn't quite get what we had hoped, so you're not going to get what you had hoped. We're going to lower the price a little bit. And really, it's bad business acumen, but can you do that when you're running a country?
That is my fear, is doing a handshake and making a deal with another country.
Yeah.
To do something, to back them up, and that, well, you know, now that I thought about
right.
it, but yeah. we agreed, well, yeah, but times are different now. That's what frightens me.
That's the meaning of the word danger right there. Because then you don't know, because if we do that to countries, then countries are going to do that to us, and then what's going to happen after that?
Someone is texting, and with good reason, what was Trump's side of this story?
We don't know what Trump's side of the story is, but we do know that other people have made similar claims, that Andrew Tesoro is not the only one who has said, I had a firm deal in place with Donald Trump and his company, and it did not pan out. You know, there's other people who have said that, many other people. So that, I mean, that's a red flag, isn't it? That's a very scary red flag to me.
That is what my fear is. Francis wants to jump in. And Francis, we don't know what you're about to talk about, so go ahead.
No, all right. I've been listening to you know, and Ro Khan and you guys bashing Trump all the time, so I need to make a comment here.
Sure.
I'm voting for Trump. And the reason why I'm voting for Trump, in spite of all these character issues you guys bring up all the time, I don't care about that. I don't care about Benghazi or the emails or nothing. Trump is talking like he's going to represent the interests of the United States. With trade policy, with illegal immigration, he wants to bring back Glass-Steagall. Clinton is going to represent the last 30 years. In the last 30 years, they're more interested in geopolitics than they are in the average American. This has been going on for too long. And we need a change. And Trump is talking like he's going to change.
He's talking now, like it, Francis.
Now, wait a minute. Now,
if,
wait a minute.
If
now,
we
wait
believed
now. Wait,
him.
Wait. All I right. have one more all thing
right.
to say.
All right.
All right. That's the way he's talking. Now, if he doesn't do what he says he's going to do, in 4 years, you vote him out. Okay? I know what Clinton's going to do. She's going to do what Obama did. Obama did what Clinton did, or what George W. Bush did, and George W. Bush did what Clinton did, and Clinton did what Bush did. We're done with that. We gotta move on here, okay? We have to move on.
But what have those people you just mentioned, our last several presidents, what have they done that you're not happy with, that you don't think is working?
All this geopolitics, all this stuff going on in the Middle East, Afghanistan, Iraq. I mean, we have troops. We have, you know, Trump is talking. He doesn't want a Cold War with Russia. Okay?
Right.
He's talking about bringing us, getting rid of all these troops overseas. You know, we got to offer our kids that are graduating from high school and college something more than just a military career. We're all over the world here. We need to stop this. We can't get in everybody's business. What they've been doing for 30 years is trading American jobs for political influence worldwide. That's what the TPP is about. And Obama even admitted it. We're going to lose jobs, but we get to influence what goes on in Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
Okay, enough of that nonsense.
So
we need
to
get out of Southeast Asia.
We don't help other countries, and then, you know, they're not going to help us, Francis.
Be perfectly frank with you. We don't need these other countries. We're the size of Europe. You know, we don't need to run all over the world. We don't need this phony, baloney free trade. That's
I see.
Why I'm voting for Trump.
And I, you
all
know
right.
what? And I understand that, and there are parts of the things you say I agree with. World trade is different than world safety, and I just feel like we need some kind of a safety net where we help other people, they help us, other countries help us.
Well, I don't think they're doing a very good job of helping us, and I think Trump has made that point. You know, we're the ones spending all the money and risking our kids' lives overseas.
Yeah.
And they're not coming up with anything for us. I don't think they are.
Really appreciate your thoughts, Francis. We really
sure.
do.
Thanks, Francis.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. All right. I know Francis's opinion differs from yours, and it differs from mine. And
most of it differs from me.
Right. There are
some common grounds.
Right.
Honestly.
I know.
I think a texter says it all by just saying in all caps right now, we're in trouble.
Yeah, you can make that argument.
Either way. I mean, I don't know what the right answer is, but... I wish there were two other candidates. Could we just, you know,
no,
mix it up?
No, the candidates have been named. All the candidates have been named. All right, a quick break and then more of your thoughts and then plenty of other stuff. It's Bill and Woods 20 on WGN.
All right, Bill.
All right.
I don't know what to
do. All right. The gloves are off, if I can quote Donald Trump. The gloves are off. No more Mr. Nice Guy. That's what he said.
Joe, talk to us.
You know, I mean, you play that thing about Trump and that clip about Trump, and even if 100% of what that guy is saying is true,
yeah.
Are you saying that Hillary has been upstanding and has withheld, upheld every end of the deal that she's ever done?
Nope.
They're politicians. They're in for themselves.
I'm not saying that. I agree with you. That's the nature of politics, is say what gets you in office. That's the way the game is played. It's sad, but it's true. They'll say anything they want to say to get into the office.
And that, almost by definition, that is actually what a demagogue is. And, therefore, every politician is a demagogue. Because they will just say whatever they want to get into.
I agree. I totally agree.
Yet everybody just says that only about Trump. And I'm not defending Trump. I'm just saying let's be equitable across the board here. You know, you want fair and equality. Well, here it is. Be fair and equitable across the board with the politicians, too. You say something bad about Trump, say something bad about Hillary. Let's match it up and see who, see who comes out on top in that respect. You know, and the other thing is, too, about when you start talking about politicians and who's going to be better, who's going to not, you've got those stock commercials and stuff where they say as a disclaimer that past results are not indicative to the future results.
Right.
You know, it's just because they were good in the past doesn't mean good or bad in the past doesn't mean they're going to be good or bad in the future.
Right.
You know, so then going all the way back to what you guys, well, I think your producer said earlier, what school does, you know, you want to have a licensed pilot to fly your plane. Well, what school did Hillary go to in order to become what she is? You got to start somewhere, and there is no school to be a politician. So, you know, you're going to get what you're going to get. It's not just because she was the Secretary of State. Well, it's an appointed position. It doesn't mean she did a good job, you know. And being a woman doesn't mean that you are qualified, and that being a man does not mean you're qualified either. So, you know, you really have to weigh a lot more than just whether they're a man or a woman or what they did before on whether they're going to be a good president or not. You know, really, ultimately, it comes down to just finding out, literally seeing and waiting until it happens to see if they're a good president.
Joe, I hope you agree with me on this. The only training there could possibly be the president is to be the president. There's no simulator. I mean, you have to sit in the Oval Office and live it, right? That's it. So
exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. That's the only way to prove it. And unfortunately, like you said, there's no computer simulation yet.
Not yet. We're hoping.
Yeah. I'll play that instead of Pokemon Go.
There's an app for that, I'm sure. So.
Hey, Joe, can I just say something, though? The reason I thought that was sort of relevant is everyone's argument is we're trillions of dollars in debt. We need a businessman to treat this country like a business and get us out of debt. And then I hear a businessman who's going back on his word. To me, that shows that's not a really good businessman. Any
Wait,
comments?
Say that again. You broke up on that. Can you say that again, please?
You're just stalling, Joe. No, I mean,
no,
Everyone's saying, you know, what is so appealing to Donald Trump about Donald Trump is because he's not a politician and he's a businessman and we're trillions of dollars in debt and we need to get this country moving again in the right financial order. But then when you hear a businessman who does a shady deal with someone and doesn't stick to his end of the deal, that to me is not a good businessman.
Well, you're right. It's not a good businessman, but I can quasi agree with somebody saying that we do need a businessman or a business person in the White House to undo a lot of the wrong that's been done. I can agree with that, but you're right. I mean, that's not a very good business person that goes back on a deal, and that goes back to my very first comment. Does that mean that Hillary is going to be, you know, just as good as Trump would be? I mean, you there's no way to know that, and it's not a good representation of who Trump is to be able to go back on a deal like that. But you know, I mean, like I said, like Bill was saying, you just got to get in there and do it.
See, we're all talking in cliches, and I'm not. No offense to you, Joe.
I don't know how else to say it.
I know, because no one knows what to say.
I lack words.
But because we all lack words, because I can't believe we're sitting in this situation. I'm telling you right now, there's not one candidate that I think, okay, that's it, hook, line, and sinker. But you have to think, I'm thinking about the future of our country. And whatever you feel is the right for the future of our country, you vote that way. That's why we have elections.
Right, exactly.
Which are rigged, we just found out yesterday.
Well, if he loses, he will say it's rigged.
Right. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah, only if he loses.
Right. If he doesn't lose, it's not rigged. What are you talking about?
No.
Joe, thank you.
People love him.
Right. I know. I've heard that. Joe, thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And people are texting. There is another option with the Independent Party. Is it Gary Johnson? Is that his name?
Yeah.
I should know more about that because, I don't know, maybe that's something people should look into.
The Libertarian candidate.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, we must take a break. Thank you, everybody, for contributing. Greatly appreciated. The news is next, and then more show. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Hey, perhaps we could do some of this conversation on the air.
I don't think we can, Wendy.
Would that be something we could
do? I don't think we can.
Our monthly friend is here. He hates when I say that.
Mike McNamara is here.
I like it.
Can I Snapchat this?
Yeah.
Sure.
Great.
Who are you?
I don't know. I'm a spunkle.
Mike is the director for programming for the Midwest Independent Film Festival, and we bring him in the first Tuesday of every month to talk about this film festival that is so important for filmmakers, not just in Chicago, but all throughout the Midwest, if not the galaxy.
If not the galaxy, right. We're the only film festival in the country where we only show films that are made in Chicago and the Midwest. We're in our 12th year. We're here every first Tuesday, and we're going strong. So this is an awesome night for us. It's a really big night for us. Tonight we're showing all short films, all made in the Midwest, all directed by women.
Is the short film thing going on because of everybody's ADHD? Or because of you only have certain number of characters, or the video can only be so long?
Well, it's a little bit of that. It's a little bit of everything. One, yes, these days, everyone's like, if it's longer than 3 minutes, I'm out of here.
Isn't that sad?
It's kind of, you know, and people are like, the doors are open. Anybody can make a film. It's like, right, but if you make a two-hour film, no one's going to watch it anymore because they, you know, people are like, I want, you know, this YouTube freaking Snapchat generation now that we've become.
But if it's good.
Man. And we have 15 amazing films tonight. It's a female filmmakers night. And this is just, it's an outstanding shorts program that I would put up against any shorts program in the country. And we're excited about it.
Let's not let the message be lost here. It's 15 films all directed by women. Mm-hmm. And boy, is that a good thing.
It really is. I thought you put in the boy thing with the women as part of it.
Or person, is that a good thing?
Oh, no.
And I say this because I see the numbers. I don't remember where
no,
I read
the numbers
this,
are nuts.
But over the last 3 years, if you look at all the feature films that have been made by the big studios in Hollywood, it's somewhere like it's under 8% have been directed by women, and that's injustice.
That's sick.
It should not be.
And it's not a talent thing. It's just not. I mean, you'll come to the films. You'll come see the films tonight. You'll see the shorts program. And if we had just said, hey, it's a shorts program, you know what I mean? And then at the end of the night, we said, oh, by the way, people would be like, what? You know, this is an awesome night. Right, exactly. So it's and it's part of the reason why we do it. You know, this is a great night of shorts. Just come and see some great films. And they happen to all be directed by women, but, you know, and all women that are making films in Chicago and Wisconsin and throughout the Midwest.
Good. You have brought one of those women with you.
Oh, I brought a guest. I brought a guest.
Oh, hello. I didn't know you could see me. Are you Snapchatting right now?
This is Fawzia Mirza. She is one of the actors in the films and also co-wrote it. It's a fun comedy called Spunkle.
Yes, it is. And I did just Snapchat this entire conversation.
She discovered Snapchat like 20 minutes ago.
Isn't
and that's
fun?
All we've been doing.
I'm new to it as well. It is kind of weird. And my younger brother said, welcome to summer 2015, sis. Like, wow, all right, great, thanks. Thanks for being so welcoming. I guess I should probably retire. And
yeah. How'd you make your video go that long on Snapchat? Isn't there a cutoff time?
I think that was 3 seconds.
Oh, do you know how to work it?
Barely, but I was reassured that just do whatever and put it out on the internet. It'll disappear in 24 hours. I'm sure Anthony Weiner was told the same thing.
I've heard this before.
Right.
I've heard this
Can somebody
before.
Else, this is a Snapchat question, totally unrelated.
I don't know.
Can somebody else save your Snap?
I think, yeah, not through the app, but you can take a screenshot of things. And I think that's kind of what people realize is that, oh, I can put anything on it. It'll disappear. Yeah, but people can screen grab it.
Right. And, or they could tape it while watching it on your phone. I mean, right.
Very creepy that they're
All right, I have to change my way I do things now.
Whoops.
Fawzia, how did you become interested in filmmaking? I know you're also an actress and a writer, but the filmmaking part in particular, why?
Well, you know, when I moved to Chicago in 2000, I actually came for law school. So I am a recovering attorney who started... I actually worked in the IBM building for a minute. Thank God it only lasted that long. It was like a Snapchat lawyering. It was a Snapchat lawyering experience.
They Snapchatted it.
It was a Snapchat litigator.
It disappeared in 24
right,
hours.
Exactly. That's about how much money I made. Less than 24 hours worth. So I decided to become an actor just because that's where my true passion was. Mm-hmm. And as I started acting and learning the art of acting, I realized that, you know, casting is really confusing. And so people want to tell the stories the way they want to, or these stories they think matter or that people want to hear, which didn't include where my diversity or my stories or things that I felt I was a part of. So I started creating my own stuff. And I, you know, made a web series called Cam Kardashian about the long lost lesbian Kardashian sister, and then started making short films because, you know, what can you make? You didn't have Snapchat.
Right.
But you could.
You had to work harder.
Yeah, exactly. You had to try a little bit harder to make friends. What can you personally make? And so I could make short films.
Yeah.
And that's where I started and started making more content. And the one that's screening tonight is the Chicago premiere at the Midwest Independent Film Festival of a short film called Spunkle, which was shot here, stars some great people in Chicago. I produced it, I co-wrote it, mm-hmm. and I might be one of the stars.
Maybe. Good.
A brief synopsis without giving too much away.
Fair enough. You didn't see all of our great eye contact. But it's basically about a couple, a female couple who decides to ask one of the women's brother who lives in the basement if he would be a sperm donor in the family.
Oh. Why was David Crosby busy? Wasn't that Melissa Etheridge's father of
the baby
Muppets?
Father.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, he was busy.
He was busy. And he's not brown
like
me. So.
Oh.
All
right.
So we were like, well, how do we make him brown? Ask the brown brother. That might help. David Crosby, what do you got in there?
brown.
Yeah,
once you have the idea, what do you do next? I mean, it's
pray.
One thing. Is that true? It probably is, right?
No, you know what it is? It's like I love coming up with ideas. So for me, there's a lot of people at places like Google might say ideating. But, just coming up with ideas and brainstorming what works, what's fun, what speaks to you, what's the story you can tell or makes, you know, what do you want to say? And what would you cast yourself in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's a role perfect for you? So it kind of all stems from that and playing with stuff that people may not have heard of before or putting a spin on it. So we've heard of couples who want to get pregnant, but I feel like comedy is really a powerful way to talk about issues and to put maybe couples that you don't typically see on screen, whether it's, you know, two women in a couple or a South Asian Muslim couple who's asking the Muslim brother, and not necessarily always the characters talking about those issues, but just by virtue of casting these people who have certain names, you are sort of changing the narrative. Mm-hmm. And I think comedy is a really powerful tool to change the narrative as well. Because once you're connecting and laughing with someone, everything else can kind of
fall by the wayside.
Exactly, yeah.
Any personal stories in this movie?
I am not pregnant right now, nor seeking pregnancy. But, you know, it's sort of that question, like, what would happen if you asked a brother, or I asked a brother, or we asked a sibling, and what could that look like?
Yeah.
And how weird or funny and awkward could it be?
Where'd the money come from?
What money?
Because no matter how good the idea is, at some point you have to sit down with a clipboard and go, this is going to cost this and this is going to cost this. So what do you do to raise the funds?
Well, my clipboard says that I have an amazing executive producer named Nabila Rashid. I may also live with her.
Oh, that comes in handy. Good.
You're getting a good deal then. That's good.
She might be the production company and the production company. Production company of the film and of my life. She's my partner and an amazing person. So she's the executive producer and also the director of the film, Lisa Donato, who's also one of the co-writers. She is also her production company put in some funds as well.
Good.
So and for that short film, you know, it's sort of within... It was probably made for $20,000, which still isn't a lot.
But
in
that
terms
goes
of,
fast.
It's still a lot of money.
Yeah, believe me.
Which is also why short films keep happening.
Yes.
Because if you're going to make a feature, unless you're going to really, you know, go run and gun for 8 or 9 days. Yeah, right. Sometimes the budget dictates, well, let's make this short. Let's show them that we can make a great short for X amount of money. And then mm-hmm. we can use that to possibly... sell the feature, or we can just make a great short and use that.
And even, I mean, it's a great way to sort of put a calling card out there. So I know another short film I made last year that did really well on the festival circuit called The First Session. I got my literary agent and my manager out in L.A. They all came from seeing that work through the festivals, and
good.
They said we.
And
like
that was
this.
Simple: one room, three people, talk, 6 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, so that's really a short film, especially in these days, is a great way to, like you said, get the word out there about yourself. Your calling card. It's a way to present yourself.
It is like an audio video business card now.
And tonight,
tonight
we're going to have 15 short films. There's everything from. Literally a 30-second stop-motion animation piece, which is awesome, mm-hmm. to a 15-minute short that is longer form. And, you know, all directed by women. All the filmmakers are going to be there. And it's just going to be an incredible night. It's at Landmark Century Center Cinema, 2828 mm-hmm. North Clark. We've got about 20 tickets left until we're sold out. Uh-oh. So run to MidwestFilm.com.
Run.
And this is your only chance to see these films, you know, is here. It's not like
good.
You're going to be on iTunes or something later. This is it.
All right. We'll continue this discussion in just a little bit. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
And we have Mike McNamara in the studio, director of programming for the Midwest Independent Film Festival. It really truly is the only place in the world to see films based from the Chicago, Milwaukee, Midwest area.
It's the only film festival on the planet where we only show films that are made in the Midwest. If
right.
it's not made around here, it's not even eligible to be considered. So when you come to our fest, you're always going to see films that are made in Chicago and
right.
the Midwest. Those films, obviously, they go to other festivals. It's just other festivals are like, we show this, we show that.
Yeah.
We are solely dedicated to the Chicago Midwest filmmaking community. And it's our 12th year. Come check it out. Be a part of it. It's an amazing night. We every night, every first Tuesday, I put that on par with opening night for any film festival
yeah.
around the country. It's a blowout.
And having been there myself several mm-hmm. times, the crowds are extremely enthusiastic. I love
it's
seeing
awesome.
That.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to go see a feature film and you kind of know the franchise,
right.
but you see a bunch of people sitting there seeing new projects and that worked up. It's really fun to see the enthusiasm.
The energy, the excitement's all there. There's a ton of filmmakers there. There's a bunch of film lovers there. You know, some
yeah.
people are like, well, I don't make film. Well, I don't want to... You could just come out and just grab some popcorn and enjoy some great films, and it's going to be an awesome night.
Are you doing question and answer after all 15 of these, or only some of them tonight?
So after we show the films, then we'll bring up the filmmakers and do like a 10-15 minute Q&A with, I think we're going to have almost all the filmmakers there.
Including Fazia Mirza.
Who's right here kicking it.
We might do a choreographed dance as well.
Wouldn't that be refreshing?
You know what I mean? I mean, we all have Q&As, but what about the Q&A plus dance?
Then you got a show.
I feel like that's something we should do.
Good. Just so you know, I'm holding you to that now. So
I might have roots in Bollywood. So.
All right. Let's
go. All right, so a producer's panel right there in the theater. And
oh, yeah, we have a good guest.
Why don't you mention this?
So we just found out last night, actually, that Saturday Night Live great Julia Sweeney is going to be headlining the panel tonight. So
that's great.
Doors are at 6, and then right in the theater at 6:30, we have a panel. We're going to have, actually, Amy Guth is going to be on the panel as well from WGN Radio.
Never heard of her.
And
wonderful
Melissa Thornley is going to be moderating it, and we're going to have Julia Sweeney. A lot of people don't know. She lives in the Chicagoland area,
yeah.
And she's going to be jumping in. So we're thrilled. We're ecstatic, and it's just going to be amazing. And then right after that, we go right into the films.
Very nice.
And 15 of them, you said.
Yeah, ranging from 30 seconds to 15 minutes. It's just a full range. Music videos, animation, longer form, comedy,
great.
Drama, all of it.
Fozzie, what was the biggest challenge for you while making this film?
Spunkle, well, by the way.
Spunkle is the film.
Fun to say.
Well,
Spunkle.
Making Spunkle, the challenge was probably just trying to do everything in 2 days. So when
Did you do this whole thing in 2 days?
Yeah, it's an 11-minute film, and, you know, yes, we were lucky to have some money, but you are literally kind of trying to figure out how to make it all happen very, very quickly, and you don't have more time. And so with filmmaking, whether it's a short film or a feature-length film, there's always the film you think about in your head, the one you write down on paper, the film that gets shot, and then the film that gets edited.
Right.
So it was fascinating to try to make sure we got everything in 2 days, and then also edit it into the perfect little package that we wanted.
How many sets in 2 days?
One set.
It was all done in one place?
It was done in one place. Like different rooms, but one place.
I forgot my question now.
No.
I did.
How many sets I asked, and it was a good question.
But see, all right, here's what would be hard for me.
Someone's prepared.
Well, I just slipped my mind. When you're making it, you said it's 11 minutes long.
Yeah.
You didn't have a time-limited length. It's just that's what it took to tell your story. Isn't it so hard, the post-production and editing?
Well, thank God I don't do that. But
but you probably sit in for it,
yeah.
Even though you're not, right?
Yeah, I totally have sat in it and given producer notes and et cetera. But I think for me the guideline is, you know, and a lot of festival programmers will tell you if you're unless you're, you know, somebody who's making a point by making a much longer short film, keep your short film 15 minutes or under.
Really?
And because otherwise people are like, well, why didn't you just make a feature film? Why didn't you just do that? Or why are you doing that? If you spent that much money to make it that 50 minutes, why didn't you just make it 75?
Yeah.
And so for me, my sweet spot in short filmmaking is under 15. And the last film I made was 6 minutes because it felt like that was really digestible. The film before that was 3 minutes, which the thing festival programmers will tell you, big festivals, small festivals, it's a really easy slot to program. 3 minutes, and people want transition films. They don't always get comedy, so doing something comedic is really fun because a lot of people want to make really dramatic movies, which is wonderful. But if you're watching 10 movies, you need a break emotionally. So having a comedy cut through is nice.
And I think more than anything, you've got to earn the minutes on the screen. It's a weird way to think about it, but if you really look at it, if you have a 35-minute short, okay, but you're creating challenges for yourself. You have to earn those 35 minutes, you know, because I program the Midwest Independent Film Festival, but I also help out with Sundance and a few other big fests around the country, so I'm watching a lot of these films, and it's like if you have a two-hour film, a two-and-a-half-hour film, that's fine, but you have to earn those minutes. And that's when it gets tough, what you guys are saying, in the editing room, when it should be an hour and a half, but you've put so much heart and time into these other scenes, and at the end of the day, really, all anyone cares about is what's on the screen. So
I should learn how to edit myself someday, because that's what I mean. It's very hard for me to edit. I just kind of go. So that to me would be the hardest part.
It's true, though. I guess I have never had children, so I don't really know the truth of this, but you have to cut off and let go of your babies.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's something wonderful you love, a scene, a moment, a look, a word, you just have to say, I love you. thank you. You had purpose, but goodbye.
At least you can do that. You should help me do that with my life.
Let's
sometime.
Do it. You know all what? Right. I'm going to open a consulting firm.
Let's do it. Life editing.
It's beautiful. One of the films that you'll see tonight at the Midwest Independent Film Festival is Fawzan Mirza's film. It's called Spunkle, but there are 14 others, all yep. of them great in their old way. Mike, again, the best way to find out, there's only a limited number of seats available.
Only about 20, 25 tickets left till we're fully sold out, 300-seat theater. You can get those at MidwestFilm.com. You can go and buy them right online and go do that. 6 p.m. tonight, Landmark Century Center Cinema, 2828 North Clark. Lots of great films. Julia Sweeney from Saturday Night Live. It's going to be an amazing night.
Very good. Thanks,
Thank
guys.
You.
Appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thank you so much.
A quick yep. break, then the news. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. And for people who have said, enough with the Trump, we want some fun. The fun starts now, Wendy.
I hate talking about politics, but I mean, really, we have to talk a little.
You have to.
I don't want to.
But you have to. It's the most
Bill
important.
Makes me.
I force Wendy to talk about politics against her will. You know how excited I get every year when the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission's National Electronic Injury Surveillance System report is filed? Right? Isn't that,
I do. You have a little party in the office when that happens.
It is. This is my Christmas. As everybody looks forward to Christmas, I always look forward to the day when the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission's National Electronic Injury Surveillance System report is filed. And today is the day. It just came out. And boy, are the statistics startling. I can't believe what I'm reading.
And this is how people get injured?
Yeah. What they do over there at the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission... is they chart month by month the strangest way in which you are probably going to get injured. Now, I have to point this out, and I don't understand how this is possible. I've been told by several people in the medical profession that so many people throughout the year cut themselves from slicing bagels
yes.
or similar things.
It's bagels, and you know why?
Why is it bagels?
Because a bagel is rounded, so you hold it up and you want to cut it, and it moves,
right.
and you cut your hand.
Your thumb, your hand, right.
So that's why they make bagel cutters now.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those.
They're, to me, a waste of money. You can do it sideways and get a serrated knife and just hold it flat and
right.
kind of go through it. That's the best way to do it.
Right.
But bagels, one of the number one ways to cut yourself.
Well, I assumed, knowing that, that would be all over this year's U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission's National Electronic Injury Surveillance System report. But it isn't even on. There's not a single month where that was the number one injury to people. But let me tell you what some of these are, and we can figure out why. Some of them are obvious. Like in January, they see more people in the hospital because of snowboarding accidents than anything else.
I believe that. It's January.
It's January.
Most people don't snowboard on a regular basis, but think they can.
Right, right.
Bing, bang, boom, in the hospital.
Snowboarding, it says here, landed more people in the hospital in the month of January with virtually no accidents during the summer months in the United States. Isn't that shocking? You can't snowboard in the summer. I mean, I guess you could go up to the top of very, very high mountains, I guess.
They do
snowboard.
It on cement, don't they? Some
snowboarding?
People.
I don't know.
Am I crazy? All right, don't answer that. I thought I have heard that they do that.
I don't know how you would. How would you snowboard on cement?
You just, it's like skateboarding, but without wheels, and you just kind of slide down. It's not good for the snowboard.
You get any traction, I don't think. I guess you could, but if you're a snowboarder, beware of the month of January because you are most apt to be injured. Now, in February, again, with snow, this one also makes perfect sense. More people are injured in incidents involving snow removal, shoveling type accidents. You could throw out your back or something.
Or the blower if it's jammed and you stick your hand in there.
Right, 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 right. It says more hospital visits related to snow removal occurred in February, and that is higher than any other winter month. So why would they separate for snow removal? They would throw in the word winter than any other winter month. But with snowboarding, they just go, yeah, during the summer, hardly anybody's injured.
Really? Read that headline. That's
it says
why.
Here at snowschool.com, the 10 best places to ski or snowboard without snow.
What did I tell you?
I'm shocked. I didn't know such a thing.
It's a hill. You find a hill, and people have been doing it like, you know, a snow hill.
Right.
In right up near the expressway in your local area. People sled down there in the winter. Well, when there's no snow, people take the snowboards and just do it on the ground.
I'm trying to think, where I go, I go to Colorado.
They always have snow.
No, they don't. During the winter, there's no. I mean, again, high up in the mountains, yes, but not where you normally ski. But I can't imagine you getting enough. And it's a pretty good, I mean, the
people
way the hill is
it.
Laid out, I'm surprised.
Livestrong.com, which used to be the Lance Armstrong place, but yeah. I don't know if they've kicked him out.
Well, you know.
I know.
You know.
Unless you live at the North Pole, you probably don't have the advantage of year-round snow upon which to practice snowboarding. You may think the off-season is only good for building anticipation for next year's snowboarding opportunities and not time for practice. But you don't have to let lack of snow stand in your way of conditioning your body and mastering your skills.
I don't think I'd like to ski. I don't snowboard, I ski, but I don't think I'd want to do it during the summer months. It just seems...
I ski on my driveway.
That's different. You don't do it on purpose, though. You just slip. That's not the same as skiing. Although the chairlift you guys built is very impressive.
Thank
I don't know
you
how you came
much.
Up with that.
I just wanted to prove
myself.
I'm
shocked that I didn't know such a thing existed. In March, more people are injured using exercise equipment than any other time
I'm
of the year.
I'm shocked that's not January when people have their New Year's resolutions to go to
right.
the health club because they
You're
forgot
right.
how to do it in that past year that they didn't go.
I know.
What's this elliptical? How does this work?
Uh-oh. It's not going to end well. It says exercise equipment was linked to hospital visits throughout the year, but the biggest spike in accidents involving exercise equipment took place in the month of March, followed closely by September. I have no idea why that would be.
I know why March.
Why March?
Because spring. You're trying to get in shape for summer.
Oh, yeah. And September, maybe your kids are going back to school. So
you have
more
time.
Some free time. All right. That makes sense.
We're smart.
We're very, very smart, Wendy. In April, there are more track
umbrellas.
Accidents.
April
no?
showers bring umbrella accidents.
I don't think umbrellas made. No, it's not on the list. Bumper shoots did, though. Why would that be? Track accidents. It says outdoor track season in high schools gets underway in the spring. In April, the sport sent an estimated 6,522 people to the hospital. It's interesting that they said estimated, but then broke it down to the number 6,522. That sounds pretty exact to me.
What month is this?
April. Stay off the track.
That's how I hurt my knee. My original knee injury was long jumping in high school, first week
it was,
of freshman
wasn't
year.
It? Wow. I've had several family incidents involving javelins. Lost several family members too. Freak javelin accidents. Isn't that crazy?
Have you sought therapy?
Yeah, I'm all right. In May, stay away from the baseball diamond.
Yeah.
It says, as baseball season heats up, the number of hospital visits related to sports jumps up to 26,568, but then declines for the rest of the year. Many of those injuries baseball related.
And May is when Little League kicks off, April and May, which to me is silly because I seem to remember Little League happening during the summer when school was out. But now it's like almost all of the games are over before school gets out.
Is that true?
So,
yeah.
And I asked somebody why, and they said, well, everybody takes, you know, summer vacations. And I'm like, no, that's when it's supposed to happen, I thought, was in the summer.
Our season always started in April and it ended in late July. So we played most of the summer, June and July, and then in August, that's when we always went on vacation because of baseball.
Really?
Because we didn't want to miss the season. Yeah, yeah. In June, now this one's, it makes sense, but still to hear it out loud seems strange. June has a lot of beach chair-related incidents and injuries. Beach chairs.
Well, sure, because you didn't go to the health club in April, and you've put on a little weight, and you know those little lawn chairs,
right.
the ones, the beach chairs?
Yeah.
I've seen people get eaten up by them. They're
swallowed whole.
Yes. It's so embarrassing, too, when you see somebody do it. They look around. Did anybody see me?
Well, aren't some of them, and I think you did this with a table, with a collapsible table. A lot of them, like with the beach chairs, like you'll jam your finger in the mechanism, the folding mechanism. Right?
Yeah.
I did it in a
tray table, those TV trays.
Yeah.
Remember my nail was split in half? They had to remove my nail and stitch my nail bed, and it came back completely fine.
You're flipping me off.
No, that's the ring finger.
Oh, okay. I just thought,
but
wow.
I honestly, it was the sickest thing I ever saw. My nail was cracked in half horizontally.
Colors I never saw before.
I know.
Purplish black kind of.
I didn't think my fingernail was going to survive, and that's where I wear my wedding ring, so I was really nervous.
Oh, that's not good.
Now I could be a hand model again.
You probably could be a hand model. Beach chairs are related to a surprisingly high number of accidents. How many beach chair accidents would you assume happen in the United States each year during the month of June? My guess would have been under 10. The correct answer, 1,231 in the month of June, beach chair accidents.
Wow.
We need to have a telethon. This has gotten out of hand.
Can I tell you what they need to do with the Chase lounges?
Yes.
I honestly have a problem with Chase lounges. When you're laying there on your back, sunning your front,
yeah,
it's awesome.
Yeah.
You can, you know, prop it up so you could read a book, do whatever you want, have a cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go to lay on your stomach to get your back tan, it's very uncomfortable.
Doesn't bend properly.
It doesn't. It should bend down.
Right.
So you could be like in an inverted U.
Yeah.
Because it's not comfortable, and especially if you have breasts.
I don't. Although it made my Christmas list every year.
What page of the Sears catalog did you circle?
318 to 326.
But when you lay on your stomach to get your backside some color,
yeah,
it really hurts. The bar's at the wrong spot,
yeah,
for the girls.
Yep.
And it what they should do is make it like a massage table where there's a hole in the middle.
Yeah, why don't they
do that? Know.
That would be great.
I am an entrepreneur.
You should be on Shark Tank. I would watch that episode.
Doesn't that make sense, though?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Except then that's what's just kind of hanging out of the middle of your beach chair. That's kind of weird, isn't it?
No, it's a small space to just put your face through. Because,
oh, only your face would go through there. Well, all right, I thought.
Yeah, and then you don't need to lay on a chair at all. But just because I can't breathe.
Does it cut off your breathing?
Well, yeah, because you don't lay face first. If you lay face first in your beach chair,
right,
you will suffocate yourself just have an unpleasant time.
Yeah.
So you have to turn your head to one side or the other, and then one cheek gets more tan than the other.
Oh, yeah. That's
so
true.
If there was a little hole like a massage, like a masseuse table.
And nobody does that. Why doesn't somebody?
God, why don't
somebody,
I
you
ever
should do it.
Keep my ideas to myself.
That's you'd make $1,000 with that one. Maybe
thanks,
maybe
Phil.
Not a thousand, but a several hundred for sure.
I need to get on that.
So be careful. The month of June, I know everybody has 10 months to prepare, but be careful if you're a beach chair owner, rich people, because you could injure yourself.
Oh, wait, can we talk to John real quick?
Sure.
My idea was already attempted?
It was, yeah, it was on Shark Tank.
It was.
On Shark Tank.
Did anybody back it?
So, I don't think so. I think they fronted it. Sorry.
<Damn. laughs>
Well done, John.
Oh, boy.
But so there was no interest in Wendy's idea? Because I think that's
genius.
It is genius.
I don't recall. I honestly don't recall. You're going to have to go back through
the archives,
YouTube records,
yeah,
and look for it. I don't recall what happened with that.
All right, because it's just a Chase lounge with a little hole cut out so you can put your face through like a massage table.
And then you could put the book on the ground
underneath. Oh, see?
That's a good idea, too.
Let's go into business together,
Jeff. Right.
All right, John, thank you for busting my bubble, or bubbles in this case.
Wow. I'm surprised you went with bubble or bubbles. I thought you were going somewhere else. We'll take a quick break, and then more of the ways that you are most likely to be injured. Some shockers ahead. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Bill and I, it's Wendy Snyder, Bill Leff. We were talking about some of the injuries that people are prone to. From what organization that put that together?
Wendy, every year, and this has been going on for many, many years, the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission puts out their National Electronic Injury Surveillance System report. Today that report is out, and the town is going wild.
And you got to the beach chair accident. What month was that?
Well, you're most likely to have some injury involving a beach chair during the month of June.
All right. Well, I had this great idea for a Chase lounge for women where there's a hole cut out like a massage table because you just can't get comfortable. And Pete, you know of something that would help?
Yes, Bubbles. My wife has one.
What?
It's called the ostrich chair.
Really?
Yeah, and it's got a hole cut out. It's got a little pad around it, just like a massage chair for your face. There's a slot on either side. You stick your arms through so you can hold your book down on the ground.
Who
works like a champ.
Who came
That's
up with this?
That's almost your
is
idea
my...
to a T.
Damn it.
I don't know. Mr. Ostrich, I guess.
Well, I don't understand why it's the ostrich.
I think because I can help you.
Your head stuck in it, like your head stuck in the sand?
Yep. That's it exactly.
Your head stuck in the hole.
All right, well, I found it at jet.com. You can order it. It's $55.
Not bad.
Introducing
the
Ostrich Ladies Comfort Lounger.
Oh.
The first Chase lounge designed for women by women. Innovative patent-pending breast cavity expands.
You know how you get breast cavities, Wendy? by don't not flossing. Brush. You don't floss properly. That's the problem.
I think Bubbles knows how to get them.
All right, Pete, you're gone. Thank you. All right. Pete's gone. He lost his phone went out
All right,
of business.
I guess.
Innovative patent-pending breast cavity expands and contracts to comfortably accommodate and support varying sizes of breasts while laying in the prone position. It's an old myth, but it sticks to this day. Ostriches bury their heads in the sand. Though the myth's not true, that doesn't mean the Ostrich Ladies Comfort Chase Lounge can't find some inspiration in the notion. Don't worry. You won't need to stick your head in the sand.
This is almost entirely what you had thought of.
I know. It's a little
really
better. No, this lounge features special arm and head cavities.
Not as much fun. Let's be honest.
So when you need to turn over to get that all over tan, you'll be able to do so comfortably. In addition to that brilliant feature, this lounge features an oversized frame, a convenient 12-inch seat height, breathable polyester, and a carrying strap. When you're done, this lounge folds for easy transport and storage.
And it looks good, too. Doesn't it? It's pretty good to look at.
It really is. I'm so hurt. The ostrich chair. I didn't even know
close.
It existed.
Well,
I'm always this close.
I know.
Here's a woman using the ostrich chair.
She seems to be having a good time.
It's exactly what I said. A hole for your head.
And then some. Yeah. Well, back to the drawing board. In July, you'll be shocked to find out that more people are injured in fireworks-related incidents.
That would not surprise me.
That's not surprising at all, is it? August is bad if you ride an elevator. Why would August, it says elevator-related emergency room visits, hit an all-time high in August?
Because the heat messes with the cables, maybe?
I guess so.
Why? Don't guess so. Just question me.
What would happen in August that would make... Isn't that crazy?
And don't a lot of people take time off in August, so there'd be less people traveling in the elevator? That makes no sense to me.
Unless you're taking a vacation on an elevator. Times are really hard if that's the case. In September, again, not a shocker here, football-related injuries. Accidents related to football send many people to the emergency room in September, which is then followed by October. And then as the football season goes on, it tends to continue.
You have injuries when you watch the Bears game. That's why you get injuries.
Heart attack.
Yes.
Usually have my annual heart attack during the Bears games. In October, there are more cheerleading accidents than any other time of the year.
They say that's one of the most dangerous sports. We laugh about it, but when you think, I know, there's more injuries due to the pyramids and such.
Yeah, because people are, I don't think we're built to stand on each other's shoulders.
Why do you think you have a little stepping area?
Okay, that's true. That's true. It says, relatedly, because they're talking about football in September, relatedly, cheerleading accidents hit an all-year high in the middle of football season, that would be October, with an estimated, 6,881 emergency room visits taking place during the month of October.
That doesn't surprise me. I would think there'd be more.
Boy, that's a lot.
Because when you jump off somebody's shoulders and you land funny on your ankle,
There
are a lot of holes in the football field sometimes.
Right. Now, I'm going to skip the month of November for just a little bit. I'm skipping it for effect because December makes perfect sense that ice hockey would lead to a lot of injuries. A lot of kids play hockey, and there's a lot of accidents on the ice. It says during the calendar year, ice hockey is linked to a high number of emergency room visits during the month of December. This, of course, the middle of ice hockey season. So that makes sense. Most of these make sense, but November is the one that stands out in my head.
Can I guess?
Yeah, but you'll never get it, ever.
Turkey wishbone accidents.
Oh, you did get it. I didn't think you would.
What is November?
In the month of November, there are more accidents involving day wear. That's the clothes that we wear every day, your normal shirts and pants.
Which I don't allow on the interior of my bed, remember. No day clothes.
No, I know.
You got to keep it over on
pajamas
the comforter.
Only.
Yep.
Pajamas only. It says day wear was the accidents involving day wear was connected to a number of hospital visits throughout the year, hitting its peak in November with an estimated 5,773 incidents nationwide. What's happening with people's pants and shirts that's making them go to the emergency room?
Are they too tight because Thanksgiving season has kicked in?
All I can think of, and I know I'm wrong, is zipper-related accidents.
Ouch.
But that's impossible. You can't have that many, can you?
Didn't say just men. Women don't have that problem as much.
No.
Cheryl might know why the elevator injuries occur in August. Cheryl?
Yeah, I'm just thinking all the move-ins to college campuses and, like, cities around the country.
That city, I bet.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine why else, but yeah. I would just think there's lots of move-ins.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. At several apartments I've had, the lease always, I know it begins whenever you move in, but a lot of them are available August 1st.
No,
you're absolutely
right. Good call.
Do you know why day clothes give you problems in November?
Don't even want to venture again.
Thank you, Cheryl.
It's funny to me that they refer to it as day wear. Mm-hmm. Like, have you ever said, Jim, I can't find my day wear. Where's my day wear? Nobody says.
In the day drawer.
Right, of course it is. Where else would it be?
All right. Everybody else is texting the kids moving into
That's
got
to be right. That has to be right.
Remember
right.
earlier when I said we're smart?
Yeah, well.
Take that back.
We were hoping. All right. We'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Ro and Anna have coming up next. I just merged every word in the sentence.
Your mouth is already finished
one.
With the show.
Stick around. More to come. Bill and Wendy, WGN.